big people and most from.
Oh,
Vilajati nam ಪತಿ
ನಿರುದ್ಧಮಪ್ಯಾಶ್ರವದಂ ಮುನೆ ತ್ರಯೋರ್ ವಿಲಜ್ಜತಿ ನಾಂ ಭೃಗುವೈರವೈಕ್ಲವಾತ್.
Durantabhava,
insuperable ecstasy. Parire bhire, embraced. Patim, husband. Nirutam,
choked up.
Api, in spite of. Ashravat,
tears.
Ambu, like drops of water.
Netrayo,
from the eyes.
Vilajatinam,
of those situated in shyness.
Bhriguvardhya,
O chief of the Bhrigus.
Vaikulavat,
inadvertently. Translation. The insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens who were shy first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced Him visually, and then they sent their sons to embrace Him, which is equal to personal embracing. But, O chief amongst the Bhrigus, though they tried to restrain their feelings, they inadvertently shed tears. Purport. Although due to feminine shyness, there are many hindrances to embracing the dear husband, Lord Sri Krishna, although due to feminine shyness, there were many hindrances to embracing the dear husband, Lord Sri Krishna, the queens performed that act by seeing him, by putting him in the cores of their hearts, by sending their sons to embrace him. Still the act remained unfinished, and tears rolled down their cheeks despite all endeavors to check them. One indirectly embraces the husband by sending the son to embrace him, because the son is developed as part of the mother's body. The embrace of the son is not exactly the embrace of the husband and wife from the sexual point of view, but the embrace is satisfaction from the affectionate point of view. The embrace of the eyes is more effective in the conjugal relationship. And thus, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, there is nothing wrong in such an exchange of feelings between husband and wife. What's the word?
The ecstasy.
The ecstasy.
The first one. The first
one. What's the voice? Okay, so here is then discussion on the transcendental ecstasy. That we see here is that then it is manifest to the queens. So much of the time we see the queens will be discussed, or previously then the women of Dwarka on the roofs and their happiness, what they were feeling. All these different, much of the time you see is ladies. Draupadi, Kunti. Simply because they're then the emotions then they're so, how do you say, forceful. More obvious, very forceful. And the nature, especially in this connection, then the conjugal rasa, because it containing all the other rasas, then is the most inclusive. So if you're going to give an example, then you always give an example that's going to be have the broadest application. So then, then in this case, then we see that the rasa here that has more of a full application to all situations. Because in it, it contains all elements of rasa. So here then, Spring brought out that this insuperable ecstasy, one as we must appreciate here is Prabhupada's coining a word. Right? So he creates words. It was interesting, I was reading that English used to do this. Nowadays, people aren't clever enough, so you have to be given a word. Previously, you had a root, and then you create the word. But Prabhupada is still clever enough. So this ecstasy is so strong, insuperable. It can't be gone beyond. Right? It is not something beyond this platform. And so in this, then, so much shyness is there. Now this is the interesting point, is that so much ecstasy, so much happiness is there, but it still manifests through shyness. Nowadays the idea is this, when you're happy, you show it, you bring it out, it goes, yes, yes, yes. But according to Shastra, that's called a third class man. First class is something amazing happens, they make me a little smile. Second class in the very, yeah, hey, you know, just like that. Third class, then it's, yes, roaring, all this stuff. And that's all you see nowadays. And that's considered to be normal. Yes, normal for third class man. The Yudhishthir, he would win the gambling match, he'd lose the gambling match. There would just be a slight smile or a slight feeling of dissatisfaction. That's first class. That's culture. Right? So we see here, so that's balance. Because otherwise, if there's so much that way, there must be so much the other way. Right? Along with all the yes, yes, comes all the swearing and the unforgiveness and the feelings of justice and bitterness and all that. They go together. They're a package. Right? If something amazing happens, it's just a little smile. If there's something unamazing happens, it's just a little bit of feeling of this is not so great. So this is what Krishna is talking about in the Gita. There's one is not elated in happiness. That means there will be happiness, but you're not elated. Right? And so the opposite also. One is not disturbed in when there's unhappiness. That's balanced. Because that's the whole point. If you can balance it, that's the meaning. It's the middle path. So that middle path is what is, that's devotional service. It's between karma and jnana. It's the path that actually functions. Right? So this is what's being brought out. Of course, this is the metaphysical aspect. But here we see the point being made is that so much insuperable ecstasy is there and shyness can still be manifest. So this is the whole point, is one can feel all emotions to their fullest extent and follow the culture. This is being shown here, right? I mean, in our experience here, don't necessarily speak for everybody, but from like that, is can we say that our ecstasies or our pains are as great as in these pages, right? We've met a friend or something or been in a situation where our ecstasy was greater than this ecstasy of this queen's. Or the pain that we felt and our sense of injustice was greater than Yudhishthir Maharaj's losing the emperorship of the whole world, unlimited, unfathomable wealth and position out of pure cheating. Have we had an experience greater than that? Right? And if we think about it realistically, poetically, yes, we can say, just like the man approaches the girl and says, if you marry me, I'll be the happiest man in the world. right? But every man says that. So, you know, of course, poetically we could say yes, it's the same, but in actuality, if we think about it, it's not. Because here they're dealing with very, very full emotions. Right? So they're still able to maintain the culture. This is important. Because otherwise there's this modern idea that no, you should show, you should let it out. Yeah, you show, you let it out, but you have to know how to show it and let it out. Just like, yes, you have to cook, so therefore you have to cut the vegetable, so get in there, cut the vegetable, do it how you like, you know, but is it going to come out nice? No. It comes out nice because you go in there and very nicely, very carefully go in and cut it. It's controlled. All this show, this, that's great for three-year-olds, right? That's what three-year-old, two-year-olds are known for. It's showing everything, doing everything, right? And then, and what do they call it? Terrible twos, right? Three's my... When do they start becoming normal? Four, they start to become a little normal. Why? Because they start to become a little controlled, a little shy. Yes? No? Think about it. So, that's the whole point. So we're having a culture that we're being... expected that we're supposed to act like 2 and 3 year olds. But because we're mature adults and have adult false egos and everybody does it, then it's considered okay. Right? That's how modern social things work. If everybody does it, then it's normal. If one or two do it, it's strange. But that's all we're dealing with. We're not necessarily dealing with, we're dealing with maturity. You know, experience and all that, but we're not dealing with necessarily cultural development. So this should always be considered that these are keys on how it actually functions and works. This is actually how it works. Right? You want to know how to get satisfaction in your life, this is how it works. It doesn't work in another way. You can try, so many have been trying. It hasn't worked for them. It won't work for you. I can say this boldly. Try whatever you like, it will not work for you. Because it can. Because God made it, not you, not anybody else. God made it. And this is the way God likes it. God likes to come home and have His women behave like this. That's why He made it like that. That's why He made the shastras like that. That's why He made the culture like that. Because this is what a man's looking for. And this is what is gives the full expression to all the woman's feelings. See, three things are going on here at once. She's seeing the Lord and embracing Him in the heart. So you get the very emotional. Then in the eyes, then is the physical. But it's still subtle. Then she sends the son, which is more gross, and it's based on relationship. Right? One could say, no, no, but she'll get more of embracing herself. Okay, so then, what is more intimate? The embrace, or the conception of a child? Right? Which is more intimate? Conception of a child. So, the child's manifestation is a manifestation of the utmost intimacy between the husband and wife. So, that child embraces the husband. That's the most intimate aspects of the woman's existence. Right? Of course, I will give a caveat here, we are discussing human society. Like that. We are discussing human society and human standards. So we see here they're getting three things, plus now they still have the opportunity when everything's calmed down, everybody's met, and the formal situations are all done, and that, and then in the evening, then when it's just the husband and wife alone, then she can physically embrace him. So she's gotten four things out of it. You name me what the modern woman gets out of it. And you add it up. One against four. And that one then is in public where she can't actually fully manifest her emotions. You cannot tell me even the sleaziest woman in the world can embrace someone in public fully with all her full emotions, full heart, full giving everything. You can't. The lowest class woman still cannot get, because she's still a woman. It can't happen. When she's alone, only then she can manifest. So now that means the modern woman doesn't even get the one. She gets a part. And now we're going to hear, we have to listen, that the modern thing is going to fully satisfy its culture. When it doesn't even get a part of one, while this Vedic, the woman gets full four. And the man gets full satisfaction also. So, that's why these are here. God made it this way because that's the way He likes it. We have to remember, He is a man, and these goddesses of fortune are women. Right? And we have to remember, we're a bunch of women that have come here to the material world, and every one of us thinks we're a man. And then by the modes of nature, we've ended up, some of us have a male form, and some of us have a female form. So, male-female relationship is two men trying to lord it over each other, but one does it through the modes of nature that push in the feminine direction, and one does it through the modes that push in the masculine direction. So, unless there's some culture, it's not going to work. It can't work. And there's no one who can say otherwise. Because that's the way it is. If one says otherwise, it can only be said some by someone who is in ignorance, who does not know what the material world is, does not know what the living entity is, does not know who God is, does not know what his pastimes are. So we can see that, yeah. So then such nice things are happening here. Right? So here it says, the embrace of the eyes is more effectual in the conjugal relation. And thus, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, there is nothing wrong with such an exchange of feelings between husband and wife. So, here is the point. These are the feelings being desired. This is the method to get it. It's not wrong. But if one knows how to do it, then one gets the benefit. And if one doesn't know how to do it, one neither gets the benefit, nor does one get social peace. Right? It doesn't. Because one must always understand one's own freedoms cannot impinge upon another's rights. No one has that right. Right? So that's the problem. Previously, the Vedic is you drop one rock in the pond and you get so many concentric circles. And each of those circles are in harmony because they're perfectly in line with the center. That means Krishna is the center of the closest, Krishna is the center of the farthest. Therefore, there's no overlap. But the modern is you throw in a handful of rocks and you get so many circles that all they do is bump into each other. And each one's trying to establish their right as the center or their right as the victim. And you can never have social harmony. Never in a million years. Why a million? Billion, trillions. Never in 311 trillion years. It's not possible. So, this is the point. We can either take it from here, that these are the practical ways to be Krishna conscious. The essence of this is that it's connected to Krishna. And it's the exchange between Krishna and his devotees. That's what's really going on here. But we as conditioned souls, because of the material needs, then the material needs are also fulfilled through the same method. Because Krishna only wants people to actually act how they act in the spiritual world. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Right? But we don't do that because of our self-centeredness, our control and enjoying mood. So that has to be controlled and channeled. So it looks like the spiritual world. And because of that, you'll get as close as you can get. Right? Because we're not enjoyers. We cannot be direct enjoyers. Only Krishna can. He is male. And he's it. There's only him. He can directly enjoy. Right? The female energy cannot directly enjoy. It enjoys through the connection with the male. That's the way it is. It's the way it's designed. So if we accept this basic fundamental fact of, you know, just, you know, how you say, just science, then everything can start to work for us. Therefore, our connection with Krishna makes everything special. When Krishna is in the center of whatever we do, everything becomes special. And if Krishna is not in the center, there's only going to be unrest. There's only going to be dissatisfaction. There's only going to be fighting and everything. It cannot be otherwise. So that's why when you control yourself, you control your senses, then what you're looking for with your senses is available. When you control your emotions, what you're looking for in emotion is available. So this doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? Because we're trying to think like a male. We're trying to think like God. But we're not God. We're energy. So therefore, in connection with, then only you get your happiness. When Krishna is pleased, we're pleased. That's the only way we're pleased. We cannot be separately pleased. So that's the contradiction. These queens here, the ecstasy they're feeling, they would love to just run over and embrace Krishna, but they don't because of the shyness. That shyness is inherent. That shyness is natural. That's natural. The street mentality, that is unnatural. Nowadays, just as the Gita says, religion is said to be irreligion, irreligion is said to be religion. Right? And Krishna is telling this to Arjuna because it's a mistake that a devotee can make. If it wasn't relevant to a devotee, Krishna wouldn't have said it in Gita. Right? They're in the middle of a battlefield. They're about to have a war. He's not going to go on some tangent. Right? 700 verses, the essence of all the Vedic literatures. I mean, that's concise. Right? The Puranas themselves, 400,000 verses. Right? Mahabharata, 100,000. 18 Puranas. Right? 400,000. One Mahabharata, 100,000. That's 500,000. Then you add in the Vedas, Upanishads, this and that. You know? You may get another 100,000. Right? 700 verses. Okay? And the first chapter is the opening. So there already, then he doesn't start giving instruction till the 11th verse of the second chapter. Right? So that's already, what, 56 verses already gone. So that's 650 verses. Krishna is going to give instruction. So he's saying this because devotees can make the same mistake. I hear it myself. I've heard it from the mouths of devotees. They're trying to tell me that things that are irreligious are normal, and things that are normal are not normal. And it's ignorance, and every last one of them has never gotten the result that they claim that they're going to get. I have yet to see it. I have not seen it. So, here we see is this is what works. It's working here. You have to remember, Krishna and the queens were married all through their whole life. They had 10 children. It went well. It worked. Draupadi and the Pandavas, it worked. Jashoda and Nanda, it worked. You can say, well, it's spiritual. Maybe that's the point. Maybe that's what we have to do, is get spiritual. You know? Because the mundane is also created, we have to remember, who created the material world? Right? So, that's the point. Krishna made it. So, Krishna knows how it works. So here, it's working. This is natural. This is normal. It works. Right? Just as one may say, no, but the girl can express how she likes, does what we like. Yes, and the boy also, it's natural that he'll be dissatisfied and he'll go looking around. The two go together. That's the problem, is the living entity, because they feel they're the center. Everything's going to go my way. Right? They even wrote a song about it. You know, but we have to remember in the song, things didn't go good. The guy did it his way, but it didn't work out nice. So, this is point, is that this is how it can work. It's not exactly the same, but in the situation, it gets you the maximum you can get. That's the thing, is we have this idea, I'm going to get everything out of everything. I think I mentioned this before, I was in Vrindavan, and this car goes by, you know how they like to put decals, right? And they put them right on the windshields and everywhere, you know, so. So then this one, it says, all I want is everything. That was on one Brajbasi car, right? So, yeah. So that's it. It's simple. All I want is everything. It's like, I'm not asking much. Right? It's straightforward, simple, you know, down to earth. So that's the thing, is that you want everything, but everything is Krishna. Krishna is everything. So as soon as Krishna is part of the equation, you have everything. See, the masculine concept is, I get what I want, I'm happy. It's not the experience of the thing. It's the getting of the thing. Getting the control, and that you, therefore, can enjoy it. And even you have it, you're enjoying it, it's still how you control it and get what you want from it. If you think about it, we're talking here just the fundamental mechanics of it. We're not talking all the nice poetics about it. If you're honest and think about it, this is what's going on. So that's the problem. You're not enjoying. So this is the problem. Is we think, no, I'm going to be happy if this happens. But we see from evidence here that that doesn't have to happen. Something else completely different can happen and you can be happy. So that's the problem. Our own false ego gets in the way. That you have situations that you could be happy in something different than the way we've designed it in our mind. But because the element of, if I control, I enjoy, therefore the situation is not going the way I want it to, I'm not in control, therefore I cannot enjoy, even though you could be. I've seen myself. We went once to a restaurant, and we had this idea we were going to order this one particular whatever preparation, or it was a tali or something like that, and everybody was attached to that idea. Go there, that item is not available, right? So many other nice items are there, but because the idea was, is I'm going to get this and enjoy that, therefore when an alternative was ordered, one couldn't enjoy it, even though if it was known from the beginning that one is not available, then you would naturally choose what's the best out of what's left, right? That's normally what happens, right? Does that make sense? It means what's like, I remember I was in Haridaspur. I was sitting there, right? It means not a whole lot, in those days not a whole lot happening. So this was the big event of the day. The morning, then first thing when the sun comes up, then the goats come through, right? And they come through together. There's a big peepal tree, and they would come by and eat all the leaves that fell off the tree. Right. So then, first they go to is the greenest leaves, and they pick up the greenest leaves and they put them in their mouth and they munch them until they get to the stem. And when they get to the stem, they bite it off and it drops on the ground. And they go through very choosy and everything like this. Then, the next big event of the day would be they'd come back at noontime, right, for the second round. Now they'll pick up also, you know, good green leaves and everything. And they will, less good. No, it would be green leaves, and then they would eat them, but they would eat the stem this time. They wouldn't drop it off onto the ground. Then the next big event was the evening, just before the sun goes down, they would come through again. This time, any leaf that was on the ground, they would eat the whole thing, yellow, dry, brown, with the stem, everything. Because that's all that was available. So that's actually how we work. But the problem is because we've made one plan, then when the situation is different, we don't move with that. We still try to apply our old plan due to attachment. And then, when it's not working, then only when we're banged over the head so many times, then we start to actually accept the situation we should have accepted when we started. But now even that has started to adjust. And it's not available. Does that make some sense? Well, if one comes into the situation with the serving mood, and how is Krishna seen here, then when the situation comes up, you see what is the best way to engage this in Krishna's service. And then take that and move with it. That's real. That's on the ground. You want to know what reality is? That's reality. Dealing with what's happening this second, right now, in consideration of the bigger plan of how Krishna says what his standards. That's reality. Because reality in this place is always changing. Right? And in the spiritual world, rasa is always changing, the flavors of rasa. So therefore, sometimes Krishna is with Radharani, and sometimes he gets stuck in a tree, and he can't be with her. But that's the flavors that are happening. So, therefore, if this masculine identity is given up, and the mood of, and the identity of I am servant of Krishna is accepted, then the servant is able to adjust with whatever has to be done. Right? You know, otherwise, what is it? Okay, so go and weed the garden. Right? So the servant's out weeding the garden. Then 10 minutes later you call him, oh hey, you know, go over to this person's house and pick this thing up, because they went, but hey, you told me to weed the garden. No. Okay, you weed the garden later, but you got to put up. But, you know, why can't you just, you know, tell me just what you want to do? I mean, why can't you be straight? Why can't you have a plan? What is going on? Is that a servant? No. It's a matter of, you know, this needs to be done, and something else is not more important, so you do it. So that's the point, is we have this thing. Why can't God make it like this? You know, you heard devotees say, why didn't God make us, you know, so that we'd be Krishna conscious? Why did He make us so we'd be un-Krishna conscious? So it's His fault that we're not Krishna conscious. Right? It's not our fault. Right? No, He made us conscious. Now it's our choice whether we want to be Krishna conscious or not. That is how He's created us. We're conscious. Tatastha means conscious. Tatastha doesn't mean specifically Krishna conscious or specifically in Maya. It means conscious of both, so one can make a choice. Internal potency is not conscious of the external potency. They come to the material world, they only see Krishna's creation. So they don't even see material energy. We see both. That's how we're created. So the contradiction is inherent in our nature. One could say, well, why did God create that? But that's the way everything in creation is. There's inside, there's outside. You take this window, you open the window. Now that space in the window, between the window frames, is that inside or is that outside? You understand? The space in the door frame, the threshold, is the threshold in the house or outside the house? You understand? So everything is created like that. There's always a juncture, a sandhi. Right? There's always, so we're the sandhi. We're the junction between internal potency and external potency. Therefore, then that contradiction will be there. You could take this or that. It's just the way it is. You know, it's just like the windows here have a valid existence. In fact, you probably appreciate them more than the columns. Right? Look at the windows, look at the wall, look at the columns. What do you like better? Think about it. Okay, so that means the junction is not that bad. Right? You have the daytime, you have the nighttime, you have the twilight. Right? Some poetics are there about the night, some are there about the day. How many are there about the sunset? Right? So that's why there's junction. So that's us. So it's not a bad thing. So the point is connected to Krishna, it has meaning. It's not connected to Krishna, then it doesn't have meaning. Is that any questions or comments? Can you explain about Anubhavas and Vyabhichari Bhavas? Bhava means the feeling that one gets by exchange. So first there has to be a relationship. That's your sthayi bhava. That's fixed. Then you have what then inspires that relationship to happen. Right? In other words, there is the male and female principle. So the male principle is Krishna, female principle is the devotees. So the devotees then have the relationship with Krishna. Right? Just like you take, you have the man of the house, you have the wife. The wife has a conjugal relationship with the husband. Husband has other relationships other than the wife. Right? So, but when the wife is there, it draws from him the conjugal mood. And when the son is there, it'll draw the fatherly mood. His friend comes over to draw that. You know, his boss comes over, it'll draw a different mood. So, who draws what mood out of Krishna? So Mother Jashoda draws the mood of he's the son. Radharani will draw the mood of that he's her boyfriend. Right? Dhanishtha will draw the mood of that she's his servant. So that's the second. You have to have that principle. And then what within that creates it. For Mother Jashoda, then, you know, seeing the kitchen and his food or his clothes or anything like that will create the motherly sentiment in her. It will give rise. Same with the gopis. When they see kunjas or the Jamuna or things, that will give rise to their relationship with Krishna. Right? Anubhava then means then from that interaction, then side happinesses, side ecstasies come. Right? Like that. So those are in performing the activity, they come. They're not in meditation. These other things are by meditation. Does that make sense? So that's in action. So in other words, these are elements of sambandha, and that's the avideya. Right? Then you get your existential ecstasies, which is your sattvika bhavas. That would be like the results, the prayojana, the standing hairs in the end, there's all these things. And sancharti means then, but those are fairly major. But within that, then you have 32 or 33. I think it's classified as one of, some classify one, some classify the other. The sancharti bhavas are the little bhavas that just, they move for a moment here and there. They just come up and down and up and down. Just they add to already the sattvika bhavas and all that. The other ones. Does that make some sense? You know, like you come into here, there's a general mood of, let's say, you like the atmosphere. Within that, then, oh, you notice the garlands on the window, and that gives something, or you notice something on the floor, that gives something else. So like that, we're changing those moods every moment. Every couple of, those are sunchari bhavas.
Where
do
they go?
Sanchari. Sanchari bhavas. There's another name, what do you call them? Vyabhachari. The same thing. So those are constantly changing. Then the sattvika comes and goes according to the situation. The anubhavas happen because of the activity. Right? The sthayi bhava is fixed. That's the permanent rasa. And then the vibhava is then what gives rise to the fixed, the sthayi bhava manifesting. Right? So they each have their part. Does that make sense?
My question is more like, Mahaprabhu's Antyalila is so expressionist.
Yeah, in the Antyalila you see so many expressions of it. So then what's the question? The levels of expression and culture. So then what would be the specific that you're looking for?
You mentioned that the expression is very dense.
Uh-huh.
If it's extensive,
okay. So then the point is he's bringing out that if it's more extensive, then it's less cultured. We were given an example in a specific, and it was specifically applied. So maybe the definition I gave was too general. What I'm saying is that in the Vedas, the cultural definitions, there are some areas that can be more fully expressed and some less fully expressed because of the situation, right? Because everything is based on situation. Situation, that's your sambandha gyan. So that's the foundation of everything. It means you have a relationship that's based on a situation, right? You have mother and child because of the situation of the child being born from the mother. You can't change that situation, right? Then there'll be the activities of that, and that'll be the happiness is tasted from that. So therefore you get your Abhideya and Prayoja, right? So in the Sambandha, then you have to see, you have to calculate into it the situation and other people's relationships in that situation. Just like the mother has a relationship with the father, so does the son. Right? So, therefore, when the son is there, then the mother is talking about the father as father. She doesn't say, my husband. She says, your father. Because that's appropriate for there, because it will, in her heart, will nourish the conjugal relationship, and externally, it will cultivate the parental, because that's what's happening in that situation. The modernists is they can't distinguish. Someone's in conjugal, all they know is conjugal. Wherever they are, they got to be holding hands and as close as possible and all that. Means just, you know, how you say, one track mind. Means very undeveloped personality. Very shallow, undeveloped personality. Because all they can be is conjugal no matter where they are. They can't discriminate, so their intelligence is less. Their training is less. Their culture is less. So they're a very undeveloped person. Right? But they can take the situation, understand that this situation is public, therefore I engage in this way. This one is more private, I engage in this way. Right? Just like this is when he's walked into the palace. So the children are there, the maidservants are there, everyone's there, but it's in the palace. So it's the queen's place. So therefore she manifests this much. If he was walking out in the street, she'd be looking out the window, then she wouldn't manifest all of these. She would only embrace in the heart. She wouldn't even do in the eyes, because people can see the eyes. Right? When someone looks at someone with some feeling or emotion, you can see it. Right? You've never had that? You're sitting there and talking, someone walks into the room and you look up at them and there's some exchange in the eyes. Everyone in the room turns around to see who it was. Because they can see something's happening. So that's why this one's only happening in the palace. But therefore it's said it's natural. Here, the embrace of the eyes is more effective in conjugal relation. And thus, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, there's nothing wrong in such an exchange of feelings between husband and wife. But in the appropriate situation, it can't be seen by others. Right? It wouldn't be seen by the son, because the son has the back to the mother and facing the father, so he can't see your eyes. So it's appropriate. So that's the point, is one has to use intelligence to see what's appropriate. So Lord Chaitanya is manifesting this, therefore manifesting this, but when's appropriate? He doesn't manifest everything. You see a lot when he's doing Sankirtan, but you don't see everything. Right? You just see him dancing in ecstasy in the Harinam. But the acharyas reveal what the conversation is. You don't hear that conversation on the street. How Lord Chaitanya is inviting Jagannath to come back to Vrindavan, you don't hear on the street. You only hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But those who know can see. And then when he's alone with the devotees, then he manifests more. They're not singing Gita Govinda on the street. It's being sung in the Gambira. Right? Plus, he's taken the male form. The male form, even in manifest ecstasies, it's not seen as much. Does that make sense? In other words, the feminine, it comes out more. That's why it must be controlled more. There's more happening. You know what I'm saying? The bigger, the more volatile a substance, the more it has to be controlled. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is the emotions, the reactions that the feminine nature gains from any situation, sensual, emotional, is far greater than the masculine. So the masculine, it's more subtle. The feminine is that same subtlety, much more intense, that it could manifest externally if it's not controlled. So if the situation warrants, then it's manifest. If it doesn't warrant, it's controlled. Does that make sense? So in other words, we were discussing more generic before. But does that make it more clear? Like that. So if it's appropriate, then it's natural. But even here it's saying that it wasn't inadvertently shed tears. They didn't feel it was appropriate. But because of the insuperable ecstasy, they couldn't hold them back. If the ecstasy was a touch less, they could have. Because it's not the right place. Does that make sense? So if that science is understood, then it creates social harmony, and what one is looking for in the social life, one gains. If not, speculation, it hasn't done the Mayavadis any good. It hasn't done the Brahma, the Buddhists, the Jains. It hasn't done the academics. None of them have actually benefited from mental speculation. Right? Because it's not connected to Krishna. Yeah? So that's why then we don't speculate. We speculate only, I mean, we do what is, it technically is called speculation, meaning if you're practicing like the last six chapters of Gita, where you're seeing, in other words, you're taking what you've heard from Shabda and applying it on pratyaksha, what you see. And you try to put it together. So technically it's mental speculation, but because it's based on Shastra, according to what Krishna says, to please him, and according to the authority of Guru, therefore it's not classified as wrong. But when Krishna is left out of the speculation, there's nothing good about it. You know, it's like so many zeros. Even you find something useful, until you put the one of Krishna, it has no meaning. So for us, without putting the one, what's the meaning?
Is that like the jnana karma analogy? Is that jnana by which you try to establish?
Jnana karmadhyaya navritam is that jnana by you understand, try to understand Krishna. Yes, because buddhi yoga means with intelligence. So you first try to understand it and then you try to apply it with that intelligence. That's buddhi yoga. You know, because until one's out of the conditioned state, one is not functioning on transcendental rasa. Well, we're functioning at best on emotional rasa, but most likely on the rasa of sense perception. You know, what our eyes, ears, nose has to pull in, and then we function on that. Does that make sense? Okay. So I think we'll end the class here, and then those who have questions can stay after, and we'll continue the questions if you'd like. Vantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Sri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Dhyana Prayana ki. Can you stay and ask a question?
Yeah, I have a question.
Can you? She's moving. Okay. Otherwise, that's going to take a follow on tomorrow's question. It's to be politically correct. Okay, so then, you have a question?
Yeah. You said that the Shakti Tattva, they're not even conscious of the external material world. And I found that a very interesting point. So then my mind comes and says, well, does that mean that that the Tathasta Shakti has a broader scope of consciousness, since it is, can be conscious of more and thus is superior?
Ah, okay. So a question has come up that we had made the point that the internal potency doesn't even see the material world, but the Tathasta Shakti does. So does that mean that the Tathasta Shakti is therefore has a broader vision or scope than even the internal potency? So are we, again, in another way, okay, we can't be God, but can we be better than the internal potency? Yes. Somehow or another, we've got to be up there on the top. Okay. So what we mean by they don't see the internal potency means that they'll see this energy, but they don't see it. They don't see it through Mahamaya. Mahamaya simply means seeing this energy without Krishna. They see this energy with Krishna, so therefore they see more. So when we get in the fire of the internal potency, we'll see like them. So we'll be, as on the absolute platform, non-different from the internal potency. Like, that's why the example is given in iron and fire. Is that the... That's the most appropriate way of explaining absolute. Because iron is always iron, but when it's in the fire, it's as good as fire. So that's the principle that's applied. Does that make some sense? So we will always be Tathasta Shakti, but we will be in the fire of the internal potency. And because we're in that fire, then we're as good as. So the internal potency in Krishna doesn't make any distinction between whether one is a jiva tattva or whether one is shakti tattva. There's no differentiation there. Does that make some sense? Because it's just all, just like Krishna doesn't make any distinction between the sandhiti, sambit, and ladini potencies. Like that. They're just all his energies. You know, so... You know, that categorization is intellectual. It's for the purpose of trying to break our connection, our attachment or connection to the material world. That's why it's there. So it's used on the platform of jnana yoga, you know, in buddhi yoga, to get us out of the material world. But once we're out, it's not used. You know, we don't distinguish that this particular aspect of personality is sandhini and this is this, and that. No, we don't do that there. It's not important. It's only important to make us conscious and aware. Because if we get aware of those bigger things, then it start to make smaller, smaller, smaller. Until we get it down to everything within our life. Right? That's the idea, is that whatever is our sphere or our world of perception, and experience. Krishna should be involved in all of that. So someone has a bigger world, then Krishna is involved in more aspects. Someone has a smaller world, it's there. So that's the advantage of simplicity, is that the world is actually smaller. You know, but if you can connect it to Krishna, then that's better than the very complex intellectual. Right? So that's the point. But on the absolute platform, it doesn't matter whether the simple person or the sophisticated person has connected everything to Krishna. Connecting to Krishna is what's important. So if that's done, it's done. And one doesn't have to worry. Does that make sense? That's why there isn't one is better than the other. Simply for understanding fullness or intensity or application, then you can say something is better than the other. But once you say something's better than the other, that is generally has a sense of duality to it. And so duality is only useful, it's a mundane quality, it's only useful if it's connected to Krishna. So if of the duality, one of them is more favorable for Krishna's service, then the duality becomes useful. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. The Prabhupada says, wet stool, dry stool, it doesn't matter. Right? Because, does that make some sense? So you have to see its use in Krishna's service. And it's there. So, therefore, the Tatastha Shakti sees less unless it connects itself to the internal potency. And when it connects itself to Maya, then it sees even less than in the Tatastha position. Because in the Tatastha position, you can see Krishna and you can see Maya, but you don't have affinity for either. But when one has attachment to Krishna, then one sees the material energy, but since it's not separate from Krishna, it's just inferior energy. So the internal potency sees superior and inferior energy. But even for them, it's engaged in Krishna's service. It's just superior energy is more convenient for service, and inferior energy is less convenient. You know? But it doesn't matter. Because the real thing is not the convenience or the results, it's Krishna's happiness. So if all you have is inferior energy to engage in Krishna's service, if Krishna is happy through that engagement, then that's perfection. But if you have superior energy to engage in Krishna's service, then when Krishna being pleased with that endeavor, that is perfection. Does that make sense? So that's why ultimately it doesn't matter whether it's internal or external potency being engaged. You know, or what element of it. It doesn't matter. Because Krishna being connected to it, that's the real thing. Right? That's vastu. It's connected to Krishna. So that's why you have like vastu shastra, right? Because then your house, your furniture, your vehicles, the land that you live on is connected to Krishna through regulations of the scriptures. Right? So that's the meaning of vastu. So that principle of vastu applies in everything. It doesn't just apply there, but it's at least one point. If you can catch it there, you can apply it anywhere. That's the principle. See, there's only one science, and that's Krishna. But because of conditioned nature, or the particular individuality, but let's take it from the conditioned state, that because of conditioning, we have particular aspects of the material energy that for us is attractive. So then the Vedic science is that take that attraction, learn that attraction fully in connection with Krishna, and get to the point where you understand the principles on which that subject works. Then you can connect everything in your life to Krishna through that. It becomes a little lopsided, but at least you connect everything. Does that make sense? Let's say you take, vastu, that we mentioned before. Now, you could go, everywhere you go, there's land, right? There's buildings, there's furniture, and there's vehicles, right? And everywhere you go, there's east, west, north, south. So that means that every moment, no matter what you're doing, you can connect everything to Krishna through Vastu. Does that make sense? You could do that. It becomes a little lopsided. But you could do it. Same way you take medicine, right? Someone's into medicine, they see everything through medical point of view. Someone's into astrology, they see everything through the astrological point of view. Someone's into business, they see everything through economics. Right? Someone's into art, they see everything through, you know. Does that make sense? So that's how the Vedic science works. That's why it's so manifold. It's because there's manifold conditioned natures. So the idea is the principles that they all work on are all the same because it's all Krishna. All it is Krishna manifested through medicine, Krishna manifested through you know, how you say, your house or city layout. You know, Krishna manifested through the influence of the planets, Krishna manifested through the science of, you know, the mind working, or through presentation, or through grammar, or through poetics, or... Because Krishna is all of that. But you're taking one particular aspect, and because he's complete, Om Purnama Dah Purnama, anything that comes from Krishna is complete. So therefore, from grammar, it's an emanation from Krishna, you can view the whole universe through it. Right? Or through philosophy, or through logic, or through... Because they're all manifestations from Krishna, so each one of them is complete in itself. But its only real completeness is when Krishna is there. Because it's an emanation from Him. So when that's understood, then that's what softens the science. Right? A Krishna-conscious, mature person in a field, it applies to himself, but he doesn't apply it to everybody. Right? You know, it's just like, you see the young punk, he gets his car. Wherever he is, it's a race. Right? But if you take someone who is actually a Formula One race driver, he will get in just very comfortable family car and drive according to all the rules down the street. Like that. I've seen it. Like that. So because he knows when to apply his science and when not to. So therefore, it may be that you have that expertise or mastery in the field, but you only apply it when it needs to be applied. Because you see Krishna in it. It's not a trip for you. It's not your identity. So that's the point. It's when it's your identity, it's not complete. Therefore, that's why it's still a disturbance. And the person who has that identity then feels, why doesn't everybody else see it this way? No, because that's their conditioned nature. Why should everybody see it that way? You know, why they have to see it that way? They don't. They see it according to their conditioned nature. Of course, the more mature platform is being able to see it from any of those perspectives. That's anuchanam. This is given in the scriptures. Anuchana means one who can see all aspects of the scriptures in any given situation with God as the center. That's anuchana. They don't just know one branch, they know all the branches. But that's not jack of all trades, master of none, because you know Krishna is the center, therefore you're actually master of all of them, though you may not be able to apply all of them. But you know how they all function. Therefore, the sages can be sitting there, you know, in their kopans under a tree, and they can advise great kings and business persons and the common farmer and the family man or the renunciate, because they know the principles on which the cosmic manifestation works. So whatever is the field that the person has, he doesn't have to be able to operate the field. He can understand how it works. You know? So then you can give advice to someone who is expert in the field, because you've mastered the actual field, which means understanding everything's connection to Krishna. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole idea, is that the internal potency is on that platform. So they see everything connected to Krishna. Well, the Tathasta has a tendency could see or not see. So that means it's they're actually technically in a lesser position. But if they connect themselves to the internal potency, no distinction is made. Like that, they don't make distinction. Like Radharani, she is the Swarup Shakti, but she doesn't consider herself superior to Mother Yashoda, who technically is her expansion. You know. And then all the other elder gopis are expansions of Mother Yashoda. But they're not seen as anything less. So that's the thing. So the distinction is only made in the realm of tattva. So tattva is intellectual for breaking our understanding, breaking our attachment to the material world. So, that, does that make sense? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that we are trained. We only enjoy the only Krishna. We must be spiritual, no man, no woman. We must be spiritual souls.
We must be spiritual souls, not men or women. Well, spiritual means woman. See, you have to. There's two things here. There is the principle of what is feminine, right? And then there's the cultural manifestation that's feminine. Does that make sense? Okay. There is femininity, and then there's the culture of expressing that femininity. Yeah? Okay. Femininity you can't change. Right? You bring the roughest, nastiest, heaviest woman, she's still feminine. Though the culture she applies her femininity through is masculine. But if you understand the science of femininity, you can see that she acts just as much as a woman as every other woman. No difference, not one bit. Because her motives for acting as a man are still feminine. The goals she's trying to get from acting as a man are still feminine. And the actual way she will view and apply the masculine activities are still feminine. So she in no way has left the feminine nature. So energy is feminine by nature. But depending upon how it manifests, it may manifest in the culture of masculine or feminine. Just like the cowherd boys will manifest masculine culture, but the purpose of doing it will still be feminine. Means to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So, in this, I guess you have to, you know, excuse us, is that we'll flow in between the two, and sometimes we don't tell which one we're functioning on. You know? So when we say we're all feminine, then it's obvious that we're working on the element of the energy. You know? And then when we're saying about here is, you know, embracing, you know, through the eyes, then we're talking feminine culture. Does that make sense? So it's like that. I mean, it's just so we will flow in between.
What is reality?
You don't like this reality. Okay, you don't like it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. The reality is it exists, and you don't like it.
We can make another reality. The devotees, we can make another reality.
Yes. Yes. You had something?
I think you were saying how Krishna's culture is reality.
Oh, okay.
And the way Krishna set up the world is reality, whether it's happening or not.
Uh-huh.
You may want to deal with this world that way. There is a way that Krishna has made it work.
Okay, and then do you understand her point?
Yeah, then she's saying, you're saying that's reality, but we don't like the material reality.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a crossover between what, how you were using the word reality and then how she's understood it and applied it.
Do you understand?
Like material reality.
Okay. Oh, that's not that. That's okay.
You're saying that there's, a higher, there's a cultural reality that we have to apply.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it's. It just struck me as that. I see. Yeah.
It's okay.
Do you understand what he's saying? No, but reality, okay, you can't accept this reality, but the point, that's what you're meaning. You said that this reality means how Krishna has described it, not how we have interpreted it. That's what I mean. The material world is going to be the way it is. That's just the way it is. But how we perceive it and therefore apply our life according to that perception, that is the reality that we can change. But it only is changeable if you connect it to Krishna. Otherwise, it will change. The modes of nature will change it for you. But it'll still be the same thing. It'll still be just a different manifestation of Maya. But if you see it in connection with Krishna, then it changes from Mahamaya to Yogamaya. It still will function the same way and look the same way. But Krishna is seen in everything, and so therefore then there's peace. So that's what Prabhupada is giving us. That's Krishna consciousness. That's what he's trying to give. Does that make sense? The devotee's reality must be different from the non-devotee's. Of course, because they see Krishna's there. So what we're speaking on is when devotees get attached to the non-devotee reality, that creates the problems, both spiritually and socially, economically, everything. Is that no one is complaining where anyone came from. Right? I was just thinking this morning about, what was it, the Star Ranch or something? Or there was some place, I think it was outside San Francisco or someplace. Prabhupada went to visit there. Morning Star. Means Prabhupada went to visit there and preach there. Everyone on Morning Star was stark naked. And so they're sitting there talking to Prabhupada and this and that and all that. And I think a whole group of devotees came from there. 5 or 7 devotees came from there. But you'll notice in the rendition, in the Lilamrita, not one of their names are mentioned. A little embarrassing that you were standing there stark naked in front of Prabhupada discussing philosophy and things like that. So no one's complaining where anyone came from. It's understood if you come from the material world, it's bad. Even if it's good, it's bad. So that's not the problem. The problem is if we remain attached to it. Right? So for us, we always talk about how attachment's bad. Attachment's not the problem. Attachment to Maya is the problem. Attachment to Krishna is what we want. But because the only attachment we know is attachment to Maya, therefore to break that, we talk about how it's bad. Then we start to doubt it. Otherwise, we're completely fixed that attachment to Maya is where it's at. Right? So you put a doubt in the mind. That's the first thing you do, right? It means beta. Before danda, you have to have beta. You have to split. So if we're going to smash the material existence, first we have to split us off from it. Otherwise we're going to stand by it and defend it. So before Krishna can destroy it, that concept, he has to split us, so you have to put a doubt. Right? So that's beta. It's diplomacy. So first the doubt has to be created that this attachment, it's the third one, samadana beta dana. So the attachment, first you have to put a doubt about it. But now even in putting a doubt about it, we can't become attached to the idea that attachment's bad. So that's what you see. When you see these social things that don't work, is you have a polarity there between two aspects of Niyamagraha. The Brahmacharya's aspect of attachment to the concept that attachment is bad. So anything to do with attachment is bad. And then you have the opposite of the duality of the Grihasthas. They're attached to the idea that attachment's okay and it's natural and it's good and it's normal and every other euphemism they try to apply. And so they'll go on fighting eternally. Because the point is attachment's not bad connected to Krishna. Attachment of the material energy is bad. But it won't stop immediately. That's the first option. If you can stop attachment to material energy immediately and transfer it to Krishna, that's the first option. If you can do it, do it. Don't waste your time. If you can't do it, then take up sadhana bhakti. Right? Because by sadhana bhakti, then you'll be able to get to prema bhakti. Right? So, through that, then you'll give up that attachment to material world by regulating it. If that's enough, but that doesn't really deal with grihastha life and all those things. It regulates your eating and sleeping and your fearing. Right? But it leaves mating out of the picture. Right? Then you bring in the element, okay, but I have to deal with that. So then that brings in the working for Krishna. So that brings in all these cultural elements, the Varnashram system. So then we see as we take that and now engage that in Krishna service. So it's a way to methodically pull oneself out of the material energy. So it's not wrong, but if we become attached to any one part of the process, we won't progress. Just like we have to go up 20 stairs to get through the door. Okay, we're happy to sit down here and not even bother with the stairs. And someone has to say, no, the door, that's where it's at. You know? And you got to go up these stairs. And then we're walking up the stairs and we like the view from the fifth stair. We turn around, hey, this is pretty good. I can see over everything. This is nice. You know? So then someone comes along and, you know, has to say, no, but you're attached. You know, like that. No, but this is the stairs. And, you know, you can go on and on and on. And then someone has to come along and go, hi, ball. The door. You know? So that's the reality. But because it comes through the flavor that uses the same terms, right? Because language is only a medium for expression. Right? So its perfection is connection to Krishna. Therefore, definition of terms sometimes is overlap. And because of that overlap, that's where argument happens. You know, so on that, then there's all these. So then, does that make sense? So attachment's not the problem if it's connected to Krishna. If it's not connected to Krishna, it is the problem. The only reason we're in the material world is because of attachment to it. If there's any one thing you can pinpoint why we're here, it's attachment to the material world. So therefore, attachment is the problem. But at the same time, attachment is the perfection. But it's just transferring the attachment from Maya to Krishna. So that's the process of sadhana bhakti. You know, that's what we're trying to span. Does that make some sense? So that's why a very mature approach has to be taken to attachment. That it has to be seen that it is normal that people are attached to material energy. But it's in, and you could say it is normal that they don't see that they're attached or they remain attached. But it's not progressive. Right? So, therefore, the Vaishnav culture is broad-minded in that it can accommodate any level of attachment, as long as that level of attachment is being progressive and that it's trying to be connected to Krishna. It may be slow, but that endeavor must be there. If that endeavor is not there, that moment it becomes absolutely useless. So therefore, that's why you see on any one particular topic, Prabhupada may give two absolute seemingly absolutely contradictory statements. Because one is being progressive and one is not. Right? Or one is being applied to someone who is attached, and one is being applied to someone who's not attached. Like that. So one has to be able to see. But the principle is the same. Because it always works. Does that make some sense? So that's very, very important to see, is that it's normal. But at the same time, if it's not progressive, it's useless. So we could say, yes, it's normal. Attachment is normal. Yes, but it's useless. So unless it's being connected to Krishna, then it becomes useful. Does that make sense? Or if that attachment, even though it's indirect and is there, just like you see so many times, you have, you know, somebody's attached to a friend, and that friend becomes a devotee, so they're still attached to the friend, and then from that, then they come in contact with Krishna, and slowly, slowly take prasad, and hear some philosophy, and over the time, then they become a devotee. So that attachment was useful, only because it connected them to Krishna. But if it didn't connect them to Krishna, it's absolutely useless. Yes?
Could you say instead of useless, it's...
You could say it's degraded. Yeah. Detrimental, yeah. Detrimental. We just use useless because it's Prabhupada would use it. Asar means it has no function. Because why we probably use it means it is detrimental, means it's against. But the point is in both of these you'll see the common principle is activity. Detrimental means it's against what is progressive. Useless means it won't make things work in a positive way. Yeah. So that's why it's very interesting if you'll look at the, like we just did something. We're taking all the words from the Gita and you put them all together and then you see the words have been used so many times in the different verses. But what's interesting to note is the different translations Prabhupada gives to the words. Many times, some of them are the same. But sometimes it's seemingly very different. So then that's where you get an insight into the actual common point, the broader aspect of that word or that meaning. Because it can be applied in so many areas. Because generally we tend to take a word and apply it only in one direction. Because that, you know, it suits our nature, our conditioned nature. Or the field that we're functioning in. But it'll be just like buddhi. Then here it's intelligence, but then Prabhupada also translates it as connect means being able to see things in light of Krishna consciousness. So that's real intelligence. Because intelligence means to discriminate, but of intelligence to discriminate what's Krishna and what's not, that's real intelligence. And then even more is even what we consider what's not, to see that in connection with Krishna, then that's even more intelligence. So the first step is you connect the duality to Krishna. The second step is you remove the duality. You know, like the first step is, okay, gold is a nicer thing to make, you know, ornaments out of than dirt. Right? But in the long run, is gold is no more valuable than dirt if it's not connected to Krishna. It's not the gold, because we're attached to gold, therefore the gold is better than something else. Or let's say gold is nicer than silver. But that's only because of our attachment. The real value is its connection to Krishna. So that at that point then Krishna is kept and material world is dropped. Otherwise, before that, we're working with the material world, so we take the best of the material world and offer it to Krishna. that at one point we see it's actually Krishna is what's valuable, then the material energy can be dropped. And, is that okay?
Yes, so that point about useless was also detrimental. So when we're engaged in spiritual life, there's no hovering.
No hovering, no. You can't. There's no such thing as neutrality, because neutrality means there's no activity. It's actually ignorance. Because we have to look at it. What's it? Nirvisesha shunyavadi. So paschatya desha. So that's the common principle. Paschatya, just one would say, okay, that's the West. What about the Orient? But according to the Vedas, then Bengal is East. And the farther west you go, the more degraded it becomes. Does that make sense? So that, therefore, Bengal is East. Everything else after that's West. You know, the farther you go. So up to Brahmavarta, that's still considered within East. But once you cross the, what do you call that? You know, the Indian, that the
Indian.
No, no. Once you cross the, from the Bay of Bengal to the Indian Ocean, between the Vindhya Mountains and the Himalayas, that's Aryabharata. After that, everything is West.
More goes.
So even you come around and it's East, and they have the culture of India, still the consciousness is more degraded. Yeah, so the farther you come in, it becomes more, because they're more focused on the material energy. Like that. Like, just like you take the you know, as we're saying here, Westerners, used in the contemporary sense, are not actually, even though they are seemingly the more materialistic people, they're not as materialistic as the Orient. Because the Westerners become bewildered by what is valuable. They sometimes have a doubt that their money or their position or that has value. But in the Orient, they know that these are the keys that make things work in the whole social system. You have position, you have money, you have this, it works. And if it does, so they're more focused on the material energy. That's why they can make it work to more advantage. So then the Westerners learn from them, you know, techniques of business and administration, because they're so much more focused. But because of that, it's more degraded, because it's more fixed in the material energy. But that's the Prabhupada said, is if you can catch them, because they're so focused on material, if you can catch them, then it'll be the opposite, they'll be the best. Yeah, so it'll just go the opposite. You know, just like you see.
The last to come.
Yeah, you know, just like you take Chitraketu. 10 million wives, right? And he's had to have a conceive a child in each and every one of them. Right? It was at a different time. I think he lived a little longer.
10 million nights.
10 million nights. Okay. Maybe he had a way to work more than one night. So whatever it is, the point is he was. I mean, that's absorbed. But then you see, is then after the instruction by Narad Muni, he's the most detached. That he's functioning on a level of detachment like Lord Shiva. And so Shiva understands what he's talking about. But even Parvati can't. You know? So the extreme is there. Someone who's so, then they'll sometimes be the one. Like I remember, there was one devotee, you come, that when he became a devotee, then everybody thought, you know, normally very gentle, super gentle, soft-spoken, so considerate, everything like this. And then many people became life members after this person became a devotee. I mean, a lot of people. And one day they were explaining that we became a devotee. I mean, we became life members because when we saw this person become a devotee, we knew this movement had potency. Because he was the baddest, nastiest guy around. You know? And becoming a devotee, he became so gentle and soft-spoken and caring and considerate. They said, we got to be part of this. So they became life members. Like that. So It's not an uncommon thing. That's why focus is so important. The blasé person, as a devotee, will still be blasé. So the point is focus is important. Focus on materialism is bad, but the point is, someone who's focused, if you can convince them of Krishna consciousness, they'll be focused on Krishna consciousness. You know? So that's why Prabhupada was always pushing this go, get, this, because it would create focus. It would create. But it's not that that's the important thing. Focus is what's important. Does that make sense? Yes.
I want to know if the Dashta Shakti is created on Krishna's desire or on our desire.
Is the Tathasta Shakti created on Krishna's desire or our desire? It means the answer would be it's Krishna's. It means it's not a matter of it's created, it exists. Because Krishna says to Arjuna, never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. It means all Krishna's energies and everything in the cosmic manifestation already exists, it already has and always will. It's just a matter of manifesting or not. Krishna manifests it when he likes, but its existence is always there. So the soul doesn't come into being, it always exists. Right? So it does not come into being, will not come into being. They always exist. Because we think in terms of time. Therefore, it may be explained in that way. Just to catch means, in other words, if you're teaching a student, the first thing you have to figure out is where the student is at. Then you have to catch the attention of the student, the interest of the student, then bring them from there to wherever you want to get them to. But if you can't catch the attention of the student, you haven't taught. You may have talked, you may have written things on the board, but you haven't taught anything. When you've actually ascertained and taught the student, so that from their position they can relate to what you've spoken, then you have taught. Right? So therefore, so much of what's explained to us is explained through the medium of time and space, because that's where we're at. But ultimately, then you see even that's dropped, and then we become confused. We say, oh, Prabhupada's contradictory, the scriptures are contradictory, it's all contradictory. No, it's not. We're contradictory. Because we're in the realm of duality. Duality means contradictory. Does that make sense? So the soul doesn't come into being, so it's not a matter of our desire or not. It has nothing to do with us. We already exist. Our desire is simply, do we want to exist in connection with Krishna or exist in connection with Maya? That's the real, what we can do. That makes sense? Is that on this or is something separate? If it's separate, we'll go to him. It's the same thing. Okay, so we'll get next. Yeah, yeah, no, that's all. No, just that he raised it simultaneously, so I thought he was a comment on that.
So, I'm not really sure how to word this, but we have our desires that we're born with and everything, and then, like you're saying all these things about how things work, like, you know, position of different people, this is all natural, this is the way Krishna created and everything, you know, whatever you say, you can't do anything about it, that's the way it is. So, but in that, also we have you know, my karma, my desires, or whatever it is, and, you know, I'm going through, you know, whatever sadhana or whatever service I have, you know, it's just a gradual process, and I have to, you know, just basically have patience or whatever. But in addition to that, I mean, sometimes it seems like, you know, okay, it's gonna, you know, just gonna take many lifetimes or something. Maybe.
I'm saying, so what's the point? What do you want to get to? I mean, your question is on how many lifetimes it's gonna take to get back to Godhead, or, you know, where does free will come in and predestiny come in, or
how to change, under guidance of some spiritual authority, I'm doing some particular service like that, but then, you know, it just seems like, you know, desires don't change, this is nothing.
So, what do you want to know? How to change those desires?
Yeah, like that.
Okay. So, that's good. You know, it's just a matter we have to find, you know, what's the working point. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, then the question won't be answered. So then, how to change desires? First of all, there must be, and first of all, the mind has to accept that there's a need to change. And that is generally inspired by a variety of options offered by the intelligence. The discrimination of the intelligence. In other words, we can see that there's the spiritual option and there's the material option. So before we only thought there's material option, so naturally we commit fully to it. But when we see there's the spiritual option, then it throws up a doubt that, well, maybe there is something wrong with material, because it's pretty obvious it's not working. But because we have nothing else, we continue at it, we try hard, we work hard. So once the mind has accepted that a change is necessary, then we start to contemplate what it is that we want to change to. What are the advantages of changing to that new value? Right? And what are the disadvantages of maintaining the particular value we have at present? Right? So contemplation is necessary, because by contemplation then we become more fixed, we get more faith in where we want to go to, and we start to lose faith in where we've come from. Right? Then, according to authority, we follow the practices that will apply that value practically in our life. Right? So then, by practicing, then slowly, 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 that practice will come to the point where it becomes easy to do that activity, right? We may not have changed the value, but by habit we can do it. Like, we can chant 16 rounds, that's not the problem. It may still be a problem to hear nicely, but it's not like before, where one day we get 16 done, and the next day we don't, and the next day we have to stay up all night and get all our rounds done, and the next day we're tired so we don't finish our rounds, and the next day we have to stay up all night. We get rid of that. So the habit, the form of the habit becomes fixed, but you have to change the habit, the actual value in the heart, the desire in the heart. So that comes by that applying both. It's called mana.
Both means
the intellectual understanding that this one is better and the other is worse, and the practice of following what's good and giving up what's worse. You understand? That combination then gives realization. That realization means change. So actual changes come in the realization. Many times devotees take it that just by they've heard what to do, they practice it, and they become good at it. And they take that as perfection. But that's only half of the second stage.
You have to do with sincerity.
Yeah, with sincerity. So that means the other half then means you have to contemplate and know what is going on.
The second stage is enough.
Means the first stage is we hear about something. Second stage is we practice it with that knowledge. Right? So generally, we're accustomed to practicing something, not bothering with the knowledge because it's not practical, it's not pragmatic. Or we contemplate the knowledge and don't practice it. That's the armchair philosopher. So between the pragmatist and the armchair philosopher, they both function on the second level, knowledge, but not completely. Therefore, neither of them get to the third level, which is realization. Right? Realization is different from understanding. Right? Both get understanding. One gets a practical understanding, one gets a theoretical understanding. That's knowledge, but realization is value. Realization means you realize why it's important and you do it. Right? You talk to most people who smoke, know, have the knowledge that it's bad. And they could probably even give you evidence why. They're coughing, or, you know, their fingers are going yellow, their teeth are going yellow, the bad breath. They can give so many things. But they have the understanding, but not the realization. So when they first go to the doctor, and the doctor tells them that they've got cancer, then realization sets in many times really fast. You know, so then they move to the next level. Then they give up smoking. Right? But, so knowledge is not enough. That's why Krishna says you must practice it with knowledge, but you have to have the devotion. Because knowledge is not, still not, practice is not enough, knowledge is not enough. The combination of those two still is not enough. Right? Karma will keep you in the material world. Jnana will seemingly get you out of the material world, but you'll still stay here. You put the two together and perform nice karma, it will get you out of the material world, but not into the spiritual world. But if it's done to please Krishna, then it becomes bhakti. Right? That's Buddha Yoga. That will get you out of the material world and get you into the spiritual world. That makes sense.
It makes sense in speaking it, but it doesn't make sense in seeing it happen. You know what I mean? That does not seem like anything.
Well, that's because you're not applying it into what you're doing. You have to connect your intellectualizing with your senses.
For example?
For example, you have to see, okay, what service do you do?
Book distribution.
Okay. So, why do you do book distribution?
That's what I've been told is the best thing for
me. You've told it's the best thing for you, but do you believe it's the best thing for you?
Yeah, I can't find anything better.
Okay, you can't find anything better. But now, if you found something better, then you might do something else.
If I was told that was better, then I would.
If you're told it's better, you would. But then, what about your having the feeling that it's better? Just like, okay, let us say, what do you like to eat? Yeah.
Khichdi.
Did someone tell you that that's the best thing to eat? Or did you find that that's the best thing for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you figured out that khichdi works the best for you. Okay. Keeps your health and everything. That's realization. That's applying your intelligence onto that. Because you've tried all the other kinds of food. And you found khichdi is the best. So you used intelligence with practical application. You came up with the realization khichdi works the best for you. Okay, so now if you apply that into your book distribution and get that same feeling that yes, this is the best because I've done so many services in both the material world and in Krishna consciousness, then you'll find you'll get a taste because you get a taste from eating khichdi. But now you get a taste from your book distribution.
I have a taste for book distribution.
Okay, but it still is intellectual. So that's good. That's an advanced stage of the second stage of knowledge. But when you've understood that this book distribution is the best service you could do for your nature, you're most comfortable with it, this is what you want to do for Krishna. Not because someone's told you to do it, because you want to do it. That's realization. That's value. That's taste.
But then all the karmas and all the desires are still there just as much.
Yeah, but that's in something else, but that's a different field. Book distribution isn't your desire for girls or your desire for this or that. It's a different area.
Right.
Right? You can't say that, well, because, you know, I ate khichdi, but, you know, I still don't have a new dhoti. You know what I'm saying? Eating khichdi satisfies the need for food. So book distribution satisfies the need for you to engage in some direct service to Krishna. But it doesn't engage your need for emotional support in a family situation or economics or other things like that necessarily. You understand? Those are different fields. You can reduce your needs down to that's all you have to do. That's the best.
You said I can't do that.
You can do that.
You can.
That's the second stage of devotional service. Second option in devotional service is just engage in sadhana bhakti. You know what I'm saying? So here you're using your book distribution as a sadhana. So you could just, you know, get up in the morning, go to take your bath, go to Mangalarti, chant your rounds, take prasad, go out and book distributions, study some of Prabhupada's books, you know, hear some classes, do other aspects of the sadhana, and go to sleep at night and be perfectly engaged your whole life.
But then these other desires...
Yes, so therefore then you have to include into it the third. The third level is work for Krishna.
Work,
yes. Work.
Because we should take care of work. Work is by book.
Work.
It's hard work.
Work.
So,
what's the guy's name?
He hated work. Okay, so let's say you're eating. Is that work?
No.
It's not work. You don't know, it means it just flies into your mouth and goes down
okay,
your stomach.
Biting,
okay, so is that work or not?
Okay.
Okay, it's work. Okay, you gotta blow your nose. Is that work or not? Okay, you gotta make your bed and get into it and roll over and go to sleep. Is that work? Okay, so that means everything is work. So you've connected one part of the work of your life, a very major part, a very important part. But you haven't applied all of your social and emotional, or sensual needs necessarily. You haven't applied those works in Krishna's service.
No.
Yeah, so you have to do that. You either have to intellectualize on them and ignore them and just drop them if that works for you, because that's better. Why deal with the senses when you don't have to? But if you have to, then how are you going to engage the work of the senses or of the emotions in Krishna's service?
That's the thing I'm asking. That's what I was trying to work
on. Okay. Okay. Yes. So, now, that means then you have to decide what are those whatever needs, emotional, economic, or sensual needs. And also that you have to consider the element of liberation, how much you can function dealing with the material energy. You have to see, in other words, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, those where desire lies, material desire. So how much can you deal with the material energy? That's the moksha aspect. What are the emotions that you're looking for from your dealings with the material energy? That's your dharma, right? Because that's your relationships. What economic standard do you need to function at to fulfill your desires, right? That's the artha. And the kama, what is the sensual needs that you're looking for? So you have to be able to combine all four of them to a package.
And the idea is to put them into the service that is working properly.
Yes. Then you connect them to Krishna.
Functional Krishna conscious work.
Yes.
So then it just takes time and effort and time to figure out.
Yes. Okay.
I had this question actually from the last class, and I asked this question, Sarva Bhavati. All the sins.
Yes.
And you explained after you surrender, then those sins are taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And the sins you did before you became a devotee, they're not taken care of. Is it because there's prarabdha to come up, or how to get take care of those sins?
How to get rid of the sins before you surrender.
Yeah, but I was thinking in my head that speaking about Rama, he said, if Rama would come to me, surrender, then I would forgive him for all the things he did after he became a Sita. So that means like before he became a devotee, the sin wasn't taken care of. And I think personally, I think most of the devotees, they surrender after the Guru because they think that's the promise. That you know, this Krishna will not see whatever I did, which is not considered. And
so what's the question? What's the question? How to reduce the sins before you became a devotee. Okay, so then what would be the reason that you'd want to reduce the sins before becoming a devotee? Because you have to suffer them in devotional life. And so what's the problem with suffering them in devotional life? Huh? You don't want to suffer. Okay. So then it's purely a subjective idea that you have to do prayaschitta along with devotional service. So why? Where do you get the idea that prayaschitta has ever removed any previous sins? And the idea that devotional service won't remove it. Yeah, okay. Okay, so if you're quoting me on it, then we have to look at what we might have meant. So you can take the devotee before he's become a devotee, right? But that's not so important in devotional service. Whatever one's done, that's not what's important. It's what you're doing now. So now, what you do now is in what field? Right? The situations you will find yourself in today are based on what? Where did those situations come from? Previous karma. So do we have to address previous karma separately? If all the situations that you're going to perform your devotional activities in now happen now. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't need to address the seed of the tree when we have the fruit of the tree in front of us. What we have to address is the fruit. The point is now if that fruit is engaged in Krishna's service, then there is no more seed. But if we don't engage it in Krishna's service, then another seed will be planted that will again give the same fruit. Does that make sense? So for the devotee, he doesn't worry about what has happened before. He worries about what he does now with the results of what he did before. Does that make some sense? Because otherwise, then it's thinking in the past, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you shouldn't worry about the past that sleeps.
Nor the future.
Yeah, nor the future.
But are you not allowed to think when you get some suffering in devotional service, what comes up?
Yeah, are you not allowed to think? Okay, so there is a problem here that you're feeling that there is some restriction, there's some mind control here. You don't have the freedom to think the way you want, when you want, how you want.
Like,
you know what I'm saying? You understand? Take that as that is a point. You know what I'm saying? In your own life, know that that is an attachment. Freedom of thinking. Does it make sense? So then you'll be able to understand how you perceive and apply everything else. Right? Because freedom of thought is important. See, because everybody has their particular attachment. So the ability to think freely how you want, like this. Though within the constraints of Shastra and Guru Sadarsha, that's there, but that is important. So that means then the elements of mukti are going to be where more attachment lies. Right? Because everybody has their attachment, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, or any combination. So then that becomes the place. So then that will give rise to things like you read in Kapila Muni's devotional service and mode of goodness. There's an attachment for that things shouldn't go wrong. There's an attachment that I don't want to take up any activity or service that will create problems. Right? So it's an attachment to detachment. So it's fine as a place to start. What I'm just saying is know that, then it will make life easier. Like that. Otherwise, then one will become bewildered by one's own attachments, even though they may be to detachment. Like that. Because ultimately, attachment has to be to Krishna. That's why the gopis are given as the example, the prime example of devotees rather than Prakashananda Saraswati. Because they've taken their attachment and fully engaged in Krishna's service. While Prakashananda Saraswati, we've seen that he's adjusted his detachment, that he brings it in line with Krishna. But we don't hear about his attachment.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore it's not on a higher, it's on as high a level. Does that make sense? So therefore, what happened in the past, you contemplate, then you know, and you see, is that being done now? It's only use of contemplating the past as if it has some effect on your service today. Because what happens in the present, that's the mode of goodness. The past and the future is ignorance and passion. Right? So that's the point. In the center of being in the present is Krishna. Because Krishna is present. So you see Krishna's presence in everything. That's being in the present. Does that make sense? Excuse me. So is that okay? Yeah. So you can think, but only think for the purpose of figuring out, is there still something from that, some either gross activity or attachment, or is it simply some subtle fragrance of previous karma that's still affecting now? Because as a karmi, whether you've changed your mentality, means you've changed your mentality or not, you're going to get the reaction. Because you're still in material consciousness, and you've done the material activity, you are responsible for it. Because you said it's your activity, your result, so therefore you're going to get your result. But for the devotee, he is surrendered to Krishna. So therefore, Krishna takes control of that karma, so-called karma. And it's only given to us in such a way that it's going to purify the heart of material contamination. So if there's no material contamination, there's no need for a reaction from previous karma to happen. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you go to the doctor to get rid of your sickness. So if you go and that sickness is over, he doesn't have to give you the medicine. Right? But in the material world, the material disease is still there. You still have attachment to material energy. Therefore, then you're going to get the reaction even if you've changed your mentality. Because the mentality has simply gone from one mundane to another. But mundane is still there, so therefore reaction comes. But if in that area you've removed all mundane attachments and needs and misgivings and anarthas, there's no need for there to be any reaction there. So Krishna doesn't give any. Okay? So, but if you're getting a reaction, that means there's still something there. Even if it's you're not doing it, but you've done it in the past. If something happens to you that shouldn't happen to you, that means you did it in the past and never got the reaction for it. You know what I'm saying? You stole in the last life. You were not punished for it by the king. You didn't do any form of atonement. This life, people will blame you as a thief even though you didn't steal. So one may say this is unjust, but no, if you look at the bigger picture, it's just the way it is. So if you're being blamed for things, because in the past it's been done. No, extras means you want extra prize chitta. You have devotional service and something extra. So you just do extra devotional service. Because there's nothing more powerful. That's what the sixth canto is about. Because in the fifth canto, then the whole universe has been described, and how everyone got in those positions means you have 14 planetary systems and so many species of life and conditions of life. So all of those are due to previous karma. Right? So then sixth canto then shows how prayaschitta has nothing to do with devotional service. Because devotional service is the real prayaschitta. So you have retribution. Like in Manu, the 11th chapter is dedicated to retribution. But the 12th chapter, so that gives all, you've done this, then this is your prayaschitta. You've done this, this is your prayaschitta. If you don't do your prayaschitta, this is what species of life you can take, paradise and all these things. But the 12th chapter is on the ultimate retribution, which means getting out of the material world. So that's the higher principle. So maybe it's you're not doing that activity, but the mentality is still there. on another level. And this may be being applied somewhere else. So, therefore, it comes just so that we'll give up that mentality. Right? You have to recognize it. So that's where you get your opportunity to intellectualize. And Krishna is giving you 6 chapters in Gita just to do that. So the 13th to 18th chapter, he's shown you techniques of, you know, mental gymnastics that you can dive and surface in and taste and apply and again. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's for. He's explained the overall usage of them in the 4th and 5th chapter. Right? But the 13th through 18th, he explains to you how to apply them. You know, especially after the 17th. 18th is like the conclusion, putting that all together. So then you should use it to advantage. You know what I'm saying? Like that. There's no problem. Because body, mind, words. Words means the intelligence. Right? And it means the senses. So then the intelligence connected to the senses, that's how you view the world, and then you intellectualize on that. You don't leave the senses with the mind. Right? That's body. But words means senses with intelligence. Does that make sense? It means senses come out of the mode of passion. So they're technically connected to the intelligence. But the senses are engaged according to the value system of the mind. Therefore, the mind becomes the 11th sense. So that means that's the body. The mind engaging the senses, that's through the body. The intelligence engaging the senses, that's to acquire information to intellectualize on, to come up with conclusions. Does that make some sense? So there's a difference there. So the body are engaged in the senses, but the mind, I mean, the means, body means with the mind. So body, mind, words. So you can also take a body meaning your identity, who you think you are. Or you can take body to be the gross body. Yeah, and then who you think you are in relationship to that. The mind to be your desires, your needs, nothing like that. So generally we connect those two, the body and the mind. But the words means it's connected to intelligence. Does that make sense? In other words, it's catching all the elements of the false ego. Because false ego is also intelligence and senses. Does that make sense? How do I get these insights?
It's like what you said about giving examples. It's precisely what's happening in my mind. Just give an example.
Means whatever. Krishna's. You have to ask someone else that one. But that's the yes. Something more on what you were saying? Okay. Then we'll get to it.
So then now that I see this is unaddressed for Dharma Artha Kama. So then, the problem I'm seeing though, because I've gone over this in my head before, is to even begin to try to address or help or whatever it is, these things that aren't taken care of, these loose ends, as for lack of words, is not possible to continue the service. To a degree, it would just hinder the service. And to address them, it's like Prahlad Maharaj says, to take care of the problem is worse than just to tolerate the problem, but I can't tolerate it either.
So then that means, if you can't tolerate the problem, then that means you have to address it. Now, one thing in there that you need to do is focus. Right? That has to be there. And you have to move forward. Don't keep moving, go back, move, go back, move, go back. You just have to take it and move forward.
It
means this, I'm talking about a mentality.
Okay.
Because the problem is you'll start forward, but then what about this, and then what about that, and like this. You won't get anywhere. The point is you can only take care of basically one thing at a time. Or things that are directly connected to that one thing. Okay? So if you focus on that, do that. Right? If you're doing book distribution, you know, you can't be, you know, doing your laundry. Right? So therefore you focus on that. Then when it's time to do your laundry, you only do your laundry. You know, when it's time to study, you only study. When it's time to chant your rounds, you only chant your rounds. Otherwise, then what happens is all of them get mixed up at once and there's no focus, so you don't actually move forward. So you need to focus so that you make, so that you get results. Otherwise, you're just going to lament because you can never make a decision there. Right? So you have to be able to make a decision, focus, make a decision, move forward, but do it with detachment, because if it's not working, then you have to reassess and then find how to adjust that focus, that then you get a better result. Right? You can't be stubborn. You have to be determined, not stubborn. Right? Stubborn means I've decided I'm going to do it this way, and that's it. So when you run into an obstacle, then you just doggedly keep going in the same way. Determined means you'll make adjustments, but you won't change your goal. But you'll see that some detail may have to change. Right? Does that make sense? You've decided, I'm going to go from here to there in the shortest possible way. But in the way is a wall. So stubbornness is I'm going to try to go through the wall or over the wall or something like that. Determined means I'll go around the wall. Because I still have my goal in mind. Stubborn means you kind of forget your goal, and your method is almost more important than your goal. Determined means your goal is more important, and so then the method you'll adjust as you go according to time, place, and circumstance. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then you just have to take each one of them. What are the emotional things that don't go away? What are the sensual things that don't go away? What are the economic or, you know, things that don't go away? You know? What are the elements of your attachment or detachment from the material world and wanting to get out of here? What are those don't go away? And then you have to see, okay, what applies where? What ashram, what varna are these best applied? Okay, book distribution is very important for you, and that basically establishes the varna. Unless you want to set up a, you know, book distribution, meaning that you're going to get books from the warehouse and distribute them to all the you know, bookstores and stuff like that, and then you're going to take your cut off, but then it becomes business. But otherwise, then, you know, if you're going to go out and talk to people and get them, convince them of the validity of this book and how it's important in their life, and then take a donation from them for that, then it's permitted.
I don't understand. Book distribution establishes a varna? Maybe I don't know what varna means.
Varna means your occupation in which you maintain yourself. Okay? So in other words, through your book distribution, you're either distributing books, taking a certain cut of that the temple allows, you're buying books from the temple at a certain rate, and then you sell them at a certain rate, then the difference between the two is your profit that you live from. Or you are living in the temple, or whatever is the situation, you're distributing books for someone else, and they maintain you. Right? So there's your varna. Okay, so now you have to look at ashram. Like, you know, you have to, in other words, you have to see, is there a thing that you really want to be in charge of everything, or you want to create big money, or you want to be famous for the skills that you have in salesmanship. If those aren't a big problem, then you don't have a problem in varna. You understand?
I don't understand the last thing. Then I don't know.
You don't have a problem in varna, because the only other aspects of varna are kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Right? So you don't want to, if you need big influence, you want control, if that's not a problem, or you want to be at the center of some very serious economics, or you want to be at the center of some serious appreciation for your skills, you know, your craftsmanship of salesmanship, of being able to distribute books. And if those aren't a problem for you, they don't even cross your mind, then your varna problem is solved. Okay?
So then
next is ashram. Ashram, then, you have to then look at it. What is then the things that are there? What emotional, economic, essential considerations are there? You know? In other words, the big question is these. Is your emotions taken care of outside of a conjugal relationship or not? Right? The emotional needs that still stand out in the mind, are they taken care of by a conjugal relationship or not? Does that make sense? Okay. So if they're taken care of outside a conjugal relationship, then you have to look at brahmacharya, vanaprastha, sannyas.
Right? We can't force this thing. It's either, this is my karma, this is what I got.
It's not a matter of force or not force. It's just a matter of looking what's there. Just like you would like to take prasad, right? And you go into where they keep the prasadam, and what's there is some khichdi. Right? So now is it force that you... That's what's there. You know, if you went there and all there was halava, then, you know, you either fast or eat halava. So it's not a matter of force, it's just a matter of dealing with what's there. See, if you look at force, then you look at there's the principle of not willing to do. And then not willing to do means inactivity. So inactivity means ignorance. Ignorance means lack of focus. So this is what we talked about in the beginning. It's due to the attachment to the freedom of activity, then it develops ignorance. Because the freedom of activity means I don't do this, but it's not that I have an alternative. Because the confusion is what I should do. But there is a thing of I don't know if I want to do what I'm being told. I'm doing it because I'm dutiful and I should be done. But as far as the heart, I'm not doing it because I want to be independent. But that independence creates ignorance, so it creates lack of focus. So then the whole question comes up. You understand? You don't. Does anybody else understand?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in other words, difficulty is there because of the... Even though you're dutiful and you work, the concept that you're having to do work that someone else is dictating is a problem. And so then that creates a desire to not be active, which is ignorance. Because inactivity is ignorance.
That's if you don't want to do the work.
That's if you don't want to do the work. But I'm talking on the principle of, otherwise, why is it a problem for you? You know, am I forced to do this? Where's my freedom? Right? We discussed, because there's two, means in other words, you can take it down to there's two basic problems. Right? Is freedom in control and freedom in sensual, in activity. Like that. You can get combinations of different things. Understand? In the control, then there's going to be actual physical control and there's going to be intellectual. And in enjoyment, it's going to be emotional and sensual. Like that. So these are the fields where your problems can come. And that's the advantage, is there's not that many fields. So it's easier to pinpoint the problem. So what we're trying to do here is pinpoint the difficulty. Is that even though you're active and you do, but there's not a focus, because you're saying yourself, you don't know quite what to do and how to deal and how to articulate and how to get down to what the point is.
Well,
okay, if you know where the problem lies, then say the problem.
So it's in the emotional essential.
Okay, it's in the emotional essential. So now, is that emotional and sensual needs, it appears it's not taken care of by the ashram that you're situated in now and the facilities you have. Okay, so that means it has to be extended.
What I don't want to extend, that's my problem.
Okay,
don't
you
extend,
don't want to extend
but
it.
But it needs to be taken care of.
Yes, okay, now why don't we want to extend it? Because it's trouble.
Yeah.
It's trouble, and that trouble will cramp your style. You can't be as independent in your activities.
Okay.
You can't be as independent in your activities.
I can't be independent.
You can't be as independent in your activities as a grihastha, as a brahmachari. That's the point. So therefore, it's a trouble. Means what you would get, benefit that you want to get from the grihastha ashram, the trouble it will take, is not worth it to you at this point. So therefore, yes, so you either have to emphasize that more, intellectualize on that more, to remove the need for those things that are offered by the grihastha ashram, and therefore keep yourself out of being entangled in it and causing yourself more trouble. Or you have to accept the responsibility, and it's a package.
Can it be intellectualized?
Yes, you can.
Intellectualize this type of things away? I mean, does it seem...
Yes, okay. So now you're saying, can you intellectualize them away or not? And you feel it's not possible.
I don't know, maybe it is.
Yeah, I'm saying Shastras recommend it, but it's like this. How do you know when you're eating that you're satisfied? Okay, so in the same way, you will know whether you can intellectualize it or not. So, in other words, in this situation, you can't.
Maybe if I intellectualize in a certain way or something, just like certain things you can eat and you won't be satisfied because you require another.
So then if you want to intellectualize, that means you have to intellectualize on, you have to contemplate its worthlessness.
Its worthlessness?
Yes. It doesn't have any worth. Okay. What emotional, sensual support you would get in the grihastha ashram for you is worthless.
Seems to me like a headache, but yet I...
Yes, it's a headache, but it's not worthless. No one said any duty is... Now, just like this. Now, is there any problems in book distribution? You like book distribution, but are there any problems?
Of course.
Okay, but are they actually a problem for you?
No, it's ecstatic.
Yes, okay. So that's the whole point. If you accept the whole package, the obstacles or the difficulties aren't a problem.
But they stop my book distribution.
No, here.
Is it okay for me to ask all these questions in a group setting?
Yeah, of course. Everybody has the same problems. Just they won't say it. If it was a problem, you'd be the only one sitting here.
Right? The same problem, everyone else has.
Everybody has the same problems, but they're embarrassed to say it. Like this situation. Yes, but the point is yes, but the point is you're doing it, so therefore it's not
brave.
A problem.
It's bravery.
Yeah, it's bravery. So therefore it's not, you know, everybody. It's appreciated. Devotees appreciate it. You know, because they don't know how to act, and so here, now listen. So the point is that You have to get your books, you have to put them in a bag, you have to carry them, they're heavy, you gotta find places to stick them when you want to go into the bathrooms, you gotta stay out of the way of, you know, authorities that don't like you distributing books wherever you're distributing books. It's problems, right? But because you've accepted the concept of book distribution, the happiness you get from it outweighs the problems.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, the same is there in grihastha ashram. If you've accepted the same principle is there in grihastha ashram. If you accept the principle of it, that there's going to be all these obstacles, you just accept these principles, then what you're looking for you can get, and you won't mind the problems, at least for 25 years. Then when the problems become too much, then they outweigh the benefits, then Krishna's arranged this wonderful thing called vanaprastha. Vanaprastha is a grihastha where the benefits are, where the problems outweigh the benefits. And a grihastha is one who the benefits outweigh the problems. Okay? You understand? That's the difference between the two.
Well, that's one side. The other side is intellectualizing away.
Yes, but I'm saying try it.
Try which?
Intellectualize it. If it works, great. Why go through the problem? Because it is a problem. But if by intellectualizing on it and contemplating it, seeing its worthlessness, it doesn't go away, then you should address it.
Well, within the intellectualizing option, just like for instance, you gave the example of eating, this is a very good example. I have health problems, I can only eat certain things, so to get the nourishment I need, I have to be very careful when I eat. So similarly, in intellectualizing, you can try to intellectualize or eat certain things, and it might not satisfy the thing, but you eat another thing or intellectualize in another method or fashion, it may satisfy, it may take care of. So then, in just like, rather than consult a health practitioner, intellectualize, you can consult an intellectualizing person or something.
Okay, so then, the point is you have to look at, okay, you take the particular emotional need or sensual need, what actual benefit you get from it? What is actually there?
There's no benefit. Just chills out for a few minutes. I'll come
okay.
Back.
Yes. So then the whole point is that's the negative side of it. Okay, that's there. On the positive side, why is it even there? What is actually gained from it? This is the harder side. The easier side is finding the fault in it. And that's always recommended because that will get you long enough through Brahmacharya Ashram that you will have studied nicely, been trained nicely, developed good habits, controlled the senses, all that. But it doesn't necessarily look it straight in the face. Because the first stage is to see what's wrong with it. If that gets rid of it, great. That means you've already faced it before. And in this life, there's a little bit left, some fragrance, and then you intellect, you see its worthlessness, it goes away. That's the nice deep brahmacharya, right? The Upakurvana brahmacharya means that he sees the worthlessness of it and then uses that to advantage so that he can get in his studies and practices and all that, so he gets situated nicely as a brahmacharya. Because a good brahmacharya will make a good grihastha, right? Because without sense control, without a direction in life, without a service attitude, without sensitivity, right? Then no man can be respected, will be respected by any woman. Right? So without that, you don't, it means a grihastha has to be a brahmachari plus he function, applies those principles in the grihastha ashram. He's not a brahmachari, he will not be respected by a woman. Like that. So he has to become one. If he wants to deal. So he has to become a brahmachari regardless. By becoming a brahmachari, it removes his need for grihasthasham. Great. You save yourself 25 years. If not, then now you have the foundation which you can be a good grihastha. Right? Because if there's no respect for women, what's the use being involved? Because it's like Prabhupada tells the story of the man who was traveling out in the desert. And he was so thirsty, and he came across a house, and he asked for a glass of water, and they were Muslims.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy came, and he gave him half a glass of water. And then he's lamenting, I've lost my caste, and my thirst is not satisfied. So that's the whole point. This commitment is important. That you have to be a committed brahmachari, he goes into a committed grihastha life. Then he will fully get what is required from it. Otherwise, he's neither a brahmachari nor a grihastha. It's useless. And women don't respect people who aren't brahmacharis. So therefore, they walk all over that man. So neither is he emotionally satisfied, but he still had to do the same work and didn't get paid for it. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, his payment comes by emotional feeling. The man looks at it, you know, 1 rupee is exchanged for 1 rupee of goods, right? And from that, then, you know, or I've done this much service, I get that much service back. But the woman is, the quality of that service, what emotional content was there, that much emotional content you'll get back. And because they're more intense, they're 9 times more intense, they achieve the same quantity of intensity in 1/9 of the time. Right? This is a very important formula if you want to go into the Grasa. The 9-to-1 formula. Put it like that. Is you're going to put in 9 parts, you're going to get back 1. Right?
The man is going to put in 9 parts. I don't understand.
And he's going to get back 1. Talk to the Grihasthas, I'll tell you all about it. See, is that it functions because the emotion that goes into the man's 9 parts of endeavor
is equal to 1.
Is part of one of the woman's because the emotional content is more. Yeah, so therefore, that's why the need of sensitivity, this and that. But now if the emotional content is not there, you're going to put in the 9 parts, and God only knows what you're going to get back. Yeah, so you're going to be frustrated. So that's why focus must be there. That's why we keep coming back to this focus. You have to be committed to whatever it is. If it's brahmacharya, the focus on that is done. If it's grihastha, then it's done. Otherwise, you get nothing from either. That focus is important. So then, therefore, you focus on it. What is it? It's useless. Therefore, okay, it's useless. Then if that gets rid of it, great. But if you see it's useless, I accept, but it still comes back in the mind. What is coming back in the mind? What is that that's coming? What is that feeling? Or what is that emotion? Then you have to look that straight in the face. That's what, to do that will either, you'll either face it, get rid of it, or that will, that's, that will be the, what do you call it? The
straw.
Yeah, the one that, you know, that's, you know, you're the thing that puts you into the grihastha. What do you call it?
The whip?
Yeah, a straw broke the back of that, the nail in the coffin. Oh no, this linchpin, I think that's what it's called. Linchpin, that's like the working thing. It means in other words, if you can evade, if you can within your mind take the emotions and the sensual things that are a problem, face them, look at them, analyze them right down to the bottom, because every one of them has an end. Because they're all material, so they're temporary, they're not eternal. If you can get all the way to the bottom, then you can remain a brahmachari. If halfway through it creates so much desire in the heart that you have to fulfill them, then you need to get married. And the desire will be there to get married. So that part of the process will make it very easy to go one way or the other.
Yes. Is that a little controversial? I don't know exactly what percentage of the people in this planet have that attracted for the same sex. What if you have that?
What if you have attraction for the same sex?
Yeah, and then you know, it's the same thing. Like someone who has attraction for the opposite sex, I mean, it may be a brahmacharya.
Well, that's another thing, because that's a detail. Uh-huh. The principle is the male-female. Uh-huh. Because what's happening in male-male or female, in these relationships is that it's the principle of the male-female interaction. But you don't appreciate the medium through the opposite sex because it's too different.
Yeah, it's different.
It's you can't understand it. While within the same, it seems to be appearingly more understandable. But the problem is you still have to apply the male-female principle. So it actually, it's not complete. And it's that, okay, it's only a male-male or female-female relationship. But it's not actually. It's just that it's more easy to understand. You know? So that's at least seemingly easy to understand, because actually it's probably easier to make a boy-girl connection than it is to make a boy-boy-girl-girl. It's much more sensitive, more delicate. It can be broken so much more easily.
Yeah, but
you know, because of the nature of it. It's just like, let us say you have a problem outside your family. It's a problem. No, I'm just saying any problem. But now if the same problem comes from within your family, it's more intense. Right? In other words, you can handle a problem from outside your family, but not from inside. So in the same way, it's more delicate and sensitive. Therefore, the male-male, female-female, it's more delicate, it's more sensitive, and it can handle actually less problems. Even though seemingly, they're more common. Right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make some sense? So the emotions that you're dealing with there are actually more intense. The jealousy, the envy, the attachments are greater. So it's just another trick of mind. It looks like it's a solution, but it's not. Because it means with her, you can't win. Is it? You can't win, you can't quit, and you can't break even. Like that. So that's just Maya.
Yeah.
So she has these different ways to drive you nuts. Yeah, it's a lose-lose. So therefore, that's why, in any case, it doesn't matter. These principles apply to anybody. But the standard is there. It's male-female. You know, in its external cultural manifestation. That's the natural. But that's not the principle is one has to deal with it anyway. Because the point is it doesn't matter what is their proclivity, they still have to be celibate. Right? You know, so that's the principle. A grihastha brahmachari means he's still celibate. In other words, he's only engaging the senses in the sense objects according to sacrifice. So it's still the same principle. Yeah, but the same principle applies. So it doesn't matter. Yeah, so therefore we can accommodate any position someone comes from, but we don't authorize it. You understand? In other words, we can accommodate that mentality and show them how to become Krishna conscious, but we don't authorize it. Because authorization doesn't make it work any better. It means you have to function by the scriptures. Like that. So does that make some sense? In other words, you have to face and see, are those emotions, what do you actually gain from them? What is their value? What is actually their worth? Because the mind only accepts things that it finds worth in. So if your mind keeps going back to them, that means even though your intelligence says there's no worth, your mind still says there's some value to it.
That's what I was going to ask. Everything's coming from the spiritual world. It's a reflection. So that emotion, that exchange, that whatever, is of the soul with Krishna. But because right now I'm envious of Krishna and I've gotten myself here as a result, there's no exchange with Krishna.
Yeah.
So that exchange is grasping out naturally.
Yeah,
so then,
of course. So now the point is you can either connect it directly to Krishna, or you see Krishna through the elements of the universal form. In other words, you may have an attachment to women, but the feminine principle is Krishna's potency in the form of woman. So it's still Krishna. That's why Krishna then says in the scriptures how he wants to be dealt with is the universal form. Because you deal with a woman, you deal with them the way you like, but you're still dealing with Krishna's energy as feminine energy. And Krishna doesn't want to be dealt with like that. Therefore, there's sin. There is sin. So that's why when you take it to the metaphysical platform, as Krishna, on the metaphysical platform, you're dealing with the energies and the potencies and the interaction. The feminine energy has a nature. The masculine energy has a nature. And there's a way that you can combine them. If you don't combine them in that way, it's sinful. If you combine it in the right way, it's pious. And if you connect it to Krishna, then it has some devotion. So the point is then you have to see Krishna in it. You can't just do with women what you want. Because the nature of woman is Krishna. Because that's what you're looking for, right? Means that's what's within it. Just like water, it's that taste, that quenching of the water. That's what we're looking at. That's Krishna. Right? Just like you take water and distill it, no taste. So even though technically it should be satisfying, it's not. So the same way, is what you're looking for in that, that's Krishna. Krishna is the mantra. He is the ritual. He is the performer. He is the results. So the same way, He is the masculine principle. He is the feminine principle. He is their interaction. So that's why if it's Him, it has to be done the way He says it's to be done. So that's the point, is you have to look at it and see what is it you want.
So then I understand what does I want, but this doesn't fit in the way He wants it done.
So it's useless, but therefore you have to take it and string it out.
String it out?
Means what you want to do is not going to happen in, you know, 1 week. It's going to take you 25 years. You know what I'm saying?
But it won't take 25 years because what I wanted doesn't fit in with the program. You know what I mean?
The point is what if you look at it, what is the element within the program? It always fits in because Krishna's created it.
But you were saying about the 9-to-1 thing, it won't work. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what you were saying. You were saying, and it makes sense.
I mean, no, it won't work, but it's what you got to live with. If you understand that, then you don't mind it. So it helps you develop sense control, patience, tolerance. You have to be very sense controlled, patient, and tolerant to deal with the 9-to-1 principle. So if you didn't develop it fully as a brahmacharya, you're going to have to develop it as a grihastha.
So it's like tough luck. This is the cards you dealt with.
No, it's tough luck. This is the cards that you're attached to. You dealt them.
I got myself.
You dealt the cards. You picked them up off the table, and now you're looking at them.
But I can't put them down. I'm too attached to them.
That's right.
That's the problem.
So now that's the point. So you got to live with it. Main thing you have to get off is that someone else dealt these cards to you. Because then there's the sense of justice and sense of wrong. No, you dealt the cards, so now you either, you know, put them down or deal with them.
I'm still going back to God. I wish there was some way to intellectualize it already.
So try it. Try it. My point is try it. Then you're going to see what it is that's important, because it's not much.
What it is that's important.
Means as karmis, they have manifold what's important for them. Devotees, it's only a few things. Means there's only a few things that are important, and you keep those simple.
For example,
okay, man is thinking from woman he'll get service and he'll get emotional support. Right? That's basically covers it. As long as you understand, emotional support includes the senses. Because women don't distinguish between emotions and senses. So in dealing with emotions, the senses come naturally. Depending upon the intimacy or your worth, then they come more or less. So this is what man is looking for in the relationship with woman. Right? So then, to do that, then there's a lot of work. You want service, that means you got to put in 9 times service for whatever service you want back. And whatever emotions you want back, you got to put in 9 times the amount.
That's kind of hellish deal.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's the women who are stupid and that they want things to be equal. Because according to the Vedic dealing, it's way out of balance. You know, I mean, the cards are stacked. Well, you have to remember, Maya is a woman, and she runs this place. So she kind of favors her own kind, you know. Shiva stays out of it because it's not worth getting involved. So it's, see, they only make this because when they say 50%, you have to understand where that 50% is. In other words, it's 9 to 1, that's already been accepted. But what they're talking about at 50% is your 1. Yeah? In other words, they want 50% of your 1.
That's a better difference.
No, then you only get 1/18th instead of 1/9th. You're right, that's right. They're not stupid. Stupidity is on the spiritual platform, it's not on the material platform. They're 4 times more clever than men. 4. These are where the proportions go. They eat twice as much. That doesn't mean physically, but what they desire and what they want it for and everybody they gotta have for them. Man will go to a feast, eat, go away. Woman goes to a feast, she'll eat, she keeps for, you know, this friend, keeps for the husband, keeps for the kids, keeps. Like that. 4 times more clever. So they figure out how to manipulate the material energy 4 times better than men. 6 times is envious, so that's a problem. And 9 times is lusty, means there's 9 times more desire in everything. Lust doesn't just mean sex. Lust means desire. So whatever a man's desire, 9 times, that's there. That's where the 9 to 1 from. So the point is this is what you've got to deal with. If you understand that, and it looks, it's not worth it, you'll be a good brahmachari. If you understand it and accept it, you'll be a great grihastha. Because the point is the experience, if you operate it properly, whatever experience can be gotten will be gained. But no one ever said it will be satisfied. No.
It's all over. You're still, you know, where you started. Basically.
Yeah. So therefore, if you can function on that, in other words, look at it very carefully this way. If you can do it, great. If you can't, then go in and look at it more carefully. Point is that Grihastha, he has the idea that he will fulfill his emotional needs in the company of a woman. By taking that up and being in that association, he understands that the soul cannot fulfill its emotional needs in the association with the material woman. And you reflect and you see, but it was so nice, all the activities of service, of this, of that, and so many things. Then Vanaprastha means that the husband and wife have understood it's not them being male and female and trying to fulfill their desires there that was of any use. It was engaging in Krishna's service that was used. Therefore, Krishna's service is more important. Therefore, we will engage in more Krishna's service. So, it's either you can do it from a distance by hearing about it or by seeing it, or you have to do it by doing it.
But even after, let's say you do it, or someone does it, and then at the end, I mean, you're still back where you started.
But that back where you started, that's the point. Brahmachari has 2 paths. Naistika means he just goes from Naistika, from Brahmachari, straight to Vanaprastha Sannyas. Right? While the Upakurvana Brahmachari goes through the Grihastha Ashram and then comes to the same realization that the Naistika had that made him Vanaprastha Sannyas. So it's a progressive plan how to get your intellectual understanding of its uselessness to realization. Because right now you're saying it's useless, but you're saying it from the intellectual platform because it doesn't add up. So that's the first stage.
But both,
But you have to make that practical.
Both of them have to, either way, both of them have to take all of those and put them on, reunite that with Krishna, where it originally supposed to be.
Yes, everybody has to unite with Krishna. So that's the point. That's why there's no difference in the brahmachari path or grihastha path. For us, pravritti or nivritti doesn't matter if it's connected to Krishna. If it's not connected to Krishna, being a brahmachari is also useless. There's so many mind-body brahmacharis, so what? So the point is that's the question. It's useless. Material existence is useless. Now you have to decide, can you get rid of it just by hearing about it and seeing the uselessness of it going through it? Or do you need to go through it and see it firsthand to completely satisfy the mind that there's nothing there and then give it up? So that's the choice. Can you do it as a brahmachari? Great. If you can't, then do it as a grihastha.
What about putting it, reuniting it with Krishna in its original innocence?
Of course, that's why it's done for Krishna.
I'm sorry?
That's why it's done for Krishna.
It's done.
Means, I'm starting off on the point that you already understand that it's being done for Krishna.
Right.
That, only within that realm we're discussing. We're not discussing following Varnashram not connected to Krishna. So we're taking already on the principle that you're connecting every aspect of that to Krishna, because that's what we were saying before in the metaphysics, is the feminine principle you're attracted to is Krishna. So therefore, how are you going to deal with it, connect to Krishna? Otherwise, how do you deal with it?
But that's external.
It is external, but your desires are external, and you've got to live with that, and you have to accept that. And until you accept that, you're not going to get anywhere.
So you can't take those external desires and put them in an internal way with Krishna? Okay?
You can, then do it.
I don't know, that's what I'm asking you.
The point is emotion. Krishna is the only place of emotion. Engaging your senses in Krishna's service, that's the only way your senses will be satisfied. Taking all your emotions and putting them on Krishna is the only way they'll be satisfied. But in doing that, your mind keeps going back to women. So either pull them out of that, or then go to Krishna through that medium. Yes,
sir. So sometimes you see, like basically our rooms about 40 years old, 45 years old, there's a history here of devotees, you know, being brahmachari and taking sannyas, and then at 50 becoming grihastha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, they didn't deal with it.
It didn't deal with
at
it.
The time, and they just kind of held on to it, and then it's just all screwed up. Because they're going to die, you know, I mean, before they can deal with it.
Yeah. And we discussed that the other day, so they'll be dead before the daughter's married.
Yeah. So it's, there's a junction of, there's a time thing.
It works best.
Has to be made. Now, am I going to be a brahmachari if I don't know why, or am I going to have to get married?
Yes. Yeah.
And if you have to be real with this, because if you're not really a brahmachari, and
let's say you're not a Naistika brahmachari.
Not a Naistika brahmachari. You should get married. Otherwise, it's going to be a disturbance in your life later on. It's going to haunt you.
Yeah. But the science has to be understood.
Right.
Because otherwise, in the past, it hasn't been. The science of attachment and detachment wasn't understood.
Right.
It means it's a matter of transferring attachment by and by doing that, you're becoming detached from the material world. So if the detachment is getting in the way of transferring attachment, you focus on the detachment long enough to start the process. Then after that, you focus on transferring attachment.
Uh-huh.
Detachment is not actually the focus.
It's attachment.
Attachment's the focus, but it's attachment to Krishna.
Right.
But because attachment means attachment to material energy, therefore, in the beginning, we focus on detachment.
Right.
That's what Prabhupada says. In the beginning, the brahmachari pulls back from all sensual engagement to become strong. Then when he's engaged with the senses, he's not disturbed. So either as a brahmachari, he's not disturbed, or as a grihastha, he's not disturbed. Because what main problem comes is right here, is this junction right now, is that he has the understanding that it's useless. So therefore, most don't do it. And then they go on and on and on, and then what they have to do is remove that understanding to go into it. And then, because they've done it due to their false ego, then they have to defend it, and they come up with all kinds of unique philosophies on why it's good and normal and natural and all that kind of thing. But that's not the point. It's, we don't. That it has to be understood, the process of education is that understanding is the second level of knowledge. Realization is the third, and it's different. It's the natural step. So devotees means he has real understanding that it's useless, but he doesn't have realization. So now he has to think about it deeply, and then, and by practicing his service, it will either come to realization, and then there's no need for it, or then one needs to get married, and through that, then one directly sees.
And what happened in Iskcon, because devotees, it was kind of like a corporate climbing culture, where you're a brahmachari and then you become a sannyasi, and you weren't really qualified. And then they developed like the opposite hatred towards women. The culture of that was amongst the brahmachari.
But it's just an attachment.
It's attachment, yeah. So but that creates so many problems. I mean.
Yeah, no, it creates social problems. Well, first you're dealing with people that don't have a culture.
Right.
So then it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
But
a real brahmachari,
doesn't care.
He's kind to women. I mean, he's not.
Yeah. Because he doesn't care. If you have nothing to gain from women, what's the problem with interacting with them nicely?
Yeah, you can be nice to them.
That's why the women can tell who's a real brahmachari and who's not. Men sometimes become bewildered.
Right.
They may think he's a good brahmachari, but if you're not sure, ask the women, and they'll tell you if he's a good brahmachari or not. Because the thing is one would think, no, the women will never say he's a good brahmachari. No, women respect, like anything, brahmacharis. Like that. Therefore, they have no problem on saying someone is, because they respect it. Because
they're not bewildered in their association.
Of course, there's a limit. Everybody has their strength and weakness, but in the natural just interaction that's there, then they can tell, and then they find it's okay. So then it's there, because they respect, because they expect to see a portion of that in the men they deal with. Because that's what's respectable to women, is brahmacharya, because they're attached, so someone who's detached, that to them is very impressive. So they know that their problems come from attachment. So they know the solution is detachment, but because it's not their field, therefore they want men who have that field. But they're willing to interact with them. That's the kindness. That's why karuna is the central principle of the conjugal rasa. Kindness. It's not sensuality, it's kindness. Yeah, karuna means kindness. Because Lord Chaitanya is tasting the conjugal rasa, but what is it? It's audarya. It's that kindness. Because that principle comes out of that. That's why it's never been given before, because the Lord's not coming in a conjugal mood. So kindness is the key within it. So that's what the women are looking for. They're looking with power that's kind.
You see, you know, if I would have had this kind of, when I was visiting, so much, but we didn't have this type of understanding. And
no.
You know, we didn't have.
No. Brahmachari there at top, eat wood in the morning, you know, we have to spit a little. That's a brahmachari.
Two or 6 days, they appreciate it, you know.
Yeah, so it's nice. See, the point is Prabhupada is dealing with what's there. He's dealing with people that their existence is women. They could not function without women. So therefore, then to create the detachment where they can even look at it with a balanced vision, then first you cultivate the detachment. And even if it goes to an extreme, that identity is still within Krishna consciousness.
Even given to the eyes.
Yeah, it's within that, because their identity is there.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why when the sannyasi would have problem, Prabhupada wouldn't excommunicate him. He'd just say, okay, now function as a grihastha.
Right, right.
But because we're in the same mode, therefore, then we get all high and mighty because he's done it, therefore he's out. But that's a neophyte. That decision is a neophyte decision. It's not even a madhyama. It's not a decision of a preacher. Like that. No one should fool themselves. That these decisions where someone does something of moral, what do they call it? Interpretive? Like that. Then they're completely put on the side. That is a neophyte mentality, and even a low-end neophyte. It's not even a high-end. Because if it's high-end, at least they know what they're dealing with, though it's tough, because I have the same problem. Therefore, when I get too close to it, I also get disturbed. That's why you see, is the more fanatic the religion, they're dealing with the more lower mentality. Because if you allow it, it's just like this. If there isn't eternal damnation for a sin, therefore, and they can atone and be in good graces again, therefore I could sin and I could atone, and you understand? So to avoid that, no, eternal damnation, okay, then I won't do it.
Right.
So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, basically we're dealing with a Christian, a Protestant mentality. In other words, devotees are applying Protestant value system on Krishna consciousness. And the problem with the Protestant is, by definition, it's devoid of all culture, all authority, and all saintly people. Absolutely, all that's left is me and God, which is actually then, at best, sahaja.
Right.
And so with that cultural foundation, then if we try to run the society, socially we'll always fail. And even spiritually they'll be difficult.
But we can learn from it.
We can learn from it. So that's the point. Yeah. Yeah. But we have to move forward. Otherwise, if we keep it at this, then it's not going to function. You know. Okay, I think we should probably end here. So you contemplate that. You know, I said, it means really contemplate it. And first go through, you have to identify what it is you're looking for. What are those things that come into the mind? Because they come in from so many directions, it looks like unlimited. Write them down on a piece of paper. What exactly it is. And as soon as you've written it down, yes, it's a few things. As soon as you've written it down, then you start to ask why.
Why?
Why that? Okay, what is it? Okay, they'll smile at you. Okay, so why is smiling at you important? Why do you need to be smiling?
There's no reason.
There is a reason. Otherwise, your mind wouldn't be attached to it. That's the point. So look for it. You want to intellectualize, I'm telling you how to do it.
Okay.
Then look for it. Why? Why do you want him to smile? Because your mother smiled. It means that you're approved. That means you're an okay guy. That means your ego is there. It means you have an identity. It means you have some position. And from that position, then you can function in life. So if the woman smiles, there's a value to your life. If you have property in the in emotional dependence in women, then when they smile at you and are pleased, that means you have a value. And if you have a value, then you have a standing in society, you have a position from where you can function.
So that actually is the position.
That's the whole thing, is you have to look at what it is what it is.
And then take that thing apart.
Yes, and you just keep going until you've dismantled the whole thing. And then if it's by dismantling it, then it goes away. Or, in going through it, you'll get stuck at some point, and that point really just grows on you, and it attacks you like a tiger. And then you know why you're a grihastha.
Yes. So that's the method of the intellectual process.
Yeah. Like that. But, I'm saying, be wary of it, ready that it's either going to make it go down, or it's going to make it go up.
Well,
you're going to be, in other words, it's going to create focus.
Time if I do
yes.
That.
Good because it creates focus. Now you know why you don't want to get married or why you want to get married. Right now you don't know if you're Arthur or Martha. You know? So that's the process. Most don't like this process.
25 years old, this is about the period. Are you 25?
I'm 29.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's
same time. Like that. So, like that. You try it, and this is the method. This method works for everybody, because the grihastha still has to do the same thing, because he's in it, and why? And he's really asking himself why he's in it. You know? So he's really got to look into it. So either he becomes frustrated and bitter and thinks it's this woman or it's that woman. If I get a different woman, it'll be better. Or he goes, no, women are women. They're, as a principle, they're the same. And it's just a matter of figuring out why is it I have attachment here? Why am I here? Because he's probably asking the question, and in some cases, even the woman's asking the question. You know, why is this guy here? So therefore, you got to ask at some point. The main thing is this here is look at this. Taste is not bad if it's connected to Krishna. Taste in things. Yes, but connected to Krishna, because taste is probably going to be very prominent for you.
So, like I've done this to some degree without being exact, because now I have exact tools to use. Find out, like you just gave, for instance, like you said, the smile, for instance.
Mm-hmm. You just think about it, and you're going to come down to it. It's going to come to a few things. It means you got how many senses?
Well, no. One second, I found things, but then I break them down. I just
ask why. Start to pick them apart. It may be difficult today, but you start thinking about it, and slowly it'll open.
Any tools you're picking?
Why?
Just
that is the tool. Why? Why is it important? Why is it of value? Why is the mind going there? What will be gained? What is the benefit of it? You know, if you're attached to an activity, what is it that you're gaining from that activity? It's not the activity, it's what you gain from it. Or you're attached to a situation. No, that situation gives rise to an activity that gives rise to a result. So then you keep following it back and you find that it comes back to certain results that you're looking for. Okay, so I think we should. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Jai Govinda Premanandi.
This is the questions everybody wants to ask.